Hi, and welcome to this week's edition of the Teen Wolf Unpacked podcast. I'm Morgan.
I'm Mitchell. We're two friends and film industry professionals who have a long-standing hobby of discussing film and TV in too much depth.
Each week we will discuss a new episode of the show, trying our best to remain spoiler-free while covering our favourite themes, tropes, and what we notice as people who are sometimes employed on film crews.
This week we're discussing Season 1, Episode 9, Wolf's Bane. Written by Jonathan Dother? Dother?
Rossler? That's an R, I think.
Oh, yeah, that makes more sense. Jonathan Rossler. And directed by Tim Andrew. It aired on the 25th of July, 2011, to a viewership of 1.93 million.
Yeah, big. Yeah, I don't know. That was a lot.
Yeah, getting up there now.
Yeah, this is the most amount of views, the most amount of live viewing that it's had, I think.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe IMDb's or Wiki is wrong or something like that.
Maybe.
Or or everyone came to see the Steric.
This is true. This is a very very good, very strong Steric episode.
Yeah. The synopsis for this episode is Jackson discovers that he has aconite poisoning and thinks he has figured out what's up with Scott. Meanwhile, Derek hides from the manhunt in Stiles' room while Stiles and Scott try to get Allison's necklace and any clues that may lead to the identity of the Alpha. Teammate Danny lends Stiles his internet expertise to help in the search.
That's- yeah, and Stiles motivates Danny in certain ways, doesn't he?
Certain ways, yeah. There was only one bit of trivia on IMDb. Although I think there's another bit of trivia. I think the guy who plays the doctor that's looking at Jackson is possibly Tyler Posey's dad.
Oh, really?
Maybe. Yeah. Someone who played some kind of doctor in Teen Wolf in the early seasons is Tyler Posey's dad. I don't know who though. It wasn't written in the trivia, so I, you know, take that with a grain of salt. The other tidbit is that, I thought you might enjoy this, when Danny and Stiles trace the text message that was sent to Allison, a trace route is displayed on the screen. The digits and octets displayed are inaccurate as something something, as not octet, an IP address can't be higher than something.
As an octet, yeah, can't be higher than 225, which... I feel so bad that I missed that because, yeah, I do know that. And and I completely missed that. I didn't even pay that much attention to the IP address. But
the one bit of technical stuff that's going to be in Teen Wolf, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you can't have an. The IP address numbers can't be over 255.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's get into it.
Let's get into it. I like how I've basically already forgotten what happened in the last episode.
We need the previously ons.
We do. But sometimes they don't remind me. Last episode was Drunk Scott, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Look, the previously ons are just to highlight what we need to know, right?
Yeah.
And apparently we don't need to know about Drunk Scott.
No, apparently not. That was a one and done. This episode opens quite unusually because we open on a periphery character, which we've currently not really opened on before. We've got Mr. Harris, the douche nozzle chemistry teacher.
Hmm.
He's at school very late, and he's got some list with a bunch of X's next to it, which presumably he didn't write because he is Adrian Harris, the last name on the list. Or maybe he did write it and he's been keeping track of all the Harrises that have been hurt.
Well, we find out in a minute who wrote it, don't we?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because the Alpha turns up and he's very scary.
Yes. Mr. Harris has the right idea in not looking at the werewolf.
Yeah, this episode we open with Mr. Harris, which... my note for this is just, it's never good news for a peripheral character when the episode opens with them. it's going to be some bad news for him. And it is bad news because the Alpha shows up and very ominously interrogates him. Well, not interrogates him, but like kind of messes with him.
At this point, I'd completely, I suppose, neglected Mr. Harris. So I found it strange that, yeah, it did open on him. And this episode kind of centers around his story a little bit. What happened to him in the past and how things have unfolded up to this point.
I keep trying to think of why this feels weird to me, because when I reflect on watching the show, I don't generally feel like the show is that coherent, if that makes sense. Like, I didn't really like... Obviously, I know the backstory. Having watched it, I know what the backstory is with, like, the Hail Fire and everything. I have all of that information. I just don't remember it being presented to us through the story. And I'm trying to decide if it's because they just didn't like take the audience through it enough. Like, it was always this kind of secondary thing where like, you know, the main story is so Scott and Allison and the social aspect of like, their relationship and whatever. But then, like, you do have this backstory that's, like, informing all the information. It's just, like, I don't know. Something about it just feels kind of weird. So when you do open on, like, you do have an episode like this and you open on the character, and you're being presented with evidence that, like, some form of investigation has been going on. Like, the Alpha comes in and is like, do you know who wrote that list that has all of the A. Harris's written on it or whatever? And Mr. Harris, like, the chemistry teacher, Mr. Harris, is the last on the list. And, you know, he acknowledges that Laura Hale wrote that list. That's like saying that, like, there's an investigation that's happened. But it's so off in the distance that you just don't think about it. And I guess I find it strange because it could so easily be like quite a big through line of the story. It's just not going to be a big through line of the story because Derek's not the main character, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, is that the other thing that happens in this episode? We do get a bit more of Derek's own backstory and things like that. Like, this episode fills in a lot of the backlog as to how we got to this point, right? I kind of got those vibes too, that the show is not great at these moments of filling in this information of what's happened in the past, because this was another one of the episodes where at least till about halfway through I was kind of like, have I seen this episode before or not? Because I can't really remember it.
Okay, go ahead, sorry.
No, you go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I just wonder if this is because if they put any more emphasis on this story, Scott would no longer be the main character.
Yeah.
Like, and this is kind of why, like, if you watch... If anyone listening watched a lot of the press coverage going into the movie last year, it did get said a couple of times that, like, and it has, I think, been said previously as well. It's like Derek is the character across the show that has probably the most character development. And I really think that, like, you know, in addition to being a fan favorite character, obviously, I just really feel like they kind of accidentally created a show that could have had two. You can take the premise of the show and you could have two completely different shows depending on which character you choose to be the main character. Like, Derek has all of the makings of being the main character of the show, and Scott being a side effect of his story. Like, you know, like someone that Derek has to, like, try and save, right? Versus Scott being the main character of the show and Derek being a foothold in his journey to learning to become the werewolf, a good werewolf, a functional werewolf, whatever kind of werewolf you want to say. But it's like Derek's character that has like all of the mythology behind him, or like is this Derek's character that's being used as the vehicle for like the exposition of the mythology and stuff like that.
It would be fascinating, as I've said before, it would be fascinating to re-edit the show around Derek. See where it stands.
I think that would upset some people.
Quite possibly.
I think it would. It would upset Tyler Posey massively.
Quite possibly. But like that's, I kind of found this episode really interesting because of that, because this is so much of Derek's backstory and things like that, and it's so rich in strange and interesting information. Like, I guess what we always end up with Scott is he's always on his hero's journey.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's just...
Well, Scott's always solving the problem of the episode, right? He's like...
Yeah.
The first season is definitely like him fighting to figure out how to live his life with this new furry condition. but it's also him fighting against the alpha. And then in later seasons, it's like him fighting that. It's like Derek's the one that's got like the long backstory.
Derek's normally the reason as to why these things are happening.
Yeah.
Which is normally, I suppose, far more interesting.
Yeah. And like they could have tied this in so much more because, you know, the alpha is having this conversation with Harris. This is also, I guess, the first time like we know the alpha can speak.
That's true.
I don't think he's spoken before, but now here he is having a full on conversation.
With a menacing voice.
Yeah, with like a really deep, menacing voice. But you can see his hand in the frame. And I mean, that's like one of the things I always really appreciated about Teen Wolf. I love like the sort of practical specials that they would do, like special effects. And like, while the CG of the alpha is kind of campy, that just like subtle framing of like the the werewolf like hand being in the corner of the frame was really like cool. And I think way more like menacing than the CG that they were able to afford. But if you like were to link it back in more, it's like Derek turns up and Derek is the one to save Harris, quote unquote. We don't know if he was actually under threat, but Derek's the one that turns up and scares the alpha off. So it's like off screen, you know that Derek is clearly still investigating and following the path that his sister has been on. Even though we get almost no reference to it.
How would this... Yeah, well, this thing, it makes sense with... because it's a story about his sister and whatnot, but this scene just wouldn't have even worked if it was... Or wouldn't have even made sense if it was, like, Scott rescuing the teacher, would it have?
No, because it would be like, how did Scott... No, the only way that, like... The only link that I could think that this has to Scott is that, like... The list kind of ties back into like one very specific frame that we've seen of Styles in, I think 106 maybe, where there's just like a scene of we see Styles looking through police reports, and obviously he's jumped on the investigative bandwagon, so you could see how like, and I mean that's like kind of how he ends up in tied in with Derek in this episode. Like, that's the only way that you could see that Scott would be pulled into even knowing that the alpha was going to target Harris. I don't know. That's kind of just like what I thought about the scene. I was like, I've seen this episode a bunch. This episode has one of probably the most gift scenes on Tumblr. Has one of like the probably like, you know, one of the bigger fan favorite scenes. So like it's been seen a bunch, and we know it's been seen a bunch because like I should look up the trailer for this episode actually and see how they marketed this at the time.
Oh, that would be really interesting to see.
Because they got a massive draw card. Like 1.93 million people is like 200,000 more people than last week.
Yeah, is that why they got 1.93 million people?
Maybe.
I think it's about that scene halfway through the episode where I'm like, oh no, I've seen this episode before.
Yeah, same. Like you get to that scene about halfway through the episode and you go, oh, that's this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Derek's doing a nice thing in saving Harris, but he's unfortunately fucked because he's apparently being pursued by police.
Yeah. Which this comes back to, so it's taken a whole episode for the police to get any sort of lead on Derek or where he is or anything like that from the school.
Yeah, well, because Derek didn't really appear in the last episode until the very end when he helped Scott out. But now, like, Derek's in a full-on car chase.
Literally outrunning a car.
I wonder if they, because they shot this in blocks, maybe they didn't, like, maybe that's why why Tyler Hoechlin wasn't in 107 or something.
Maybe.
He's got, like, a fair amount of, like, action sequences to do in this episode.
He was just too busy running around for this episode.
Yeah, so we've gone into an action sequence where Derek is being pursued through like some sort of industrial area.
How close is this industrial area to the school?
Yeah, that's what I was like. I was like, how did he get from the school? I mean, yes, I know the practicalities of like doing this kind of scene. You have to basically do it in some sort of like industrial area or like locked off road because you have to shut down the roads and you have to have like
a whole lot of stunt vehicles around and things like
that. You have to have quite a lot of control over the situation. I actually have listened to the episode of the sort of like iHeartRadio podcast that Holland Roden's doing. I have listened to that episode which about this episode of the show which was with the director, and I do remember the conversation they had about shooting this scene. I have this pet peeve in the film industry where people talk about the horrifically dangerous shit that like and corners that sometimes get cut in the film industry, and they talk about it as if it's fine. I fucking hate that. Like I just wish to God that like people would stop. Like it's cool that you didn't. It looks cool, but like. The corners they get cut sometimes are awful and the scene can still be cool. And when you're 10 years past having shot that and no longer are associated with the show, you can definitely be like, yeah, it was maybe not great that we like all of these vehicles alive. Nothing's on a low loader. It's not a stunt double in the scene. It's the actor. Like we're driving cars towards people. It's like, that's not good, folks.
I suppose the attitude is kind of like, well, we survived, which
that's such an attitude in the film industry, like the we survived or like we got
away with it.
We do long hours, we do hard stuff. And it's like, yeah, we do that. And like, yes, there is a certain element of like when you're there, you want to be participating and you want to be pulling your weight and you want to be doing everything you can because everyone else is doing it. So why shouldn't you be doing it? But at the same time, you should also, like, everyone has the right to go to work and be, like, should be 100% safe.
Safe, yeah.
And, like, when you take a film set and, like, this is nighttime, presumably people are very tired. Not presumably, people are very tired. Overworked.
Because like, they're doing these however many hour long days, day in and day out. For 5 days, if you're lucky. Maybe longer.
I don't know. I just don't love. Yeah. I don't love when people like, sort of, talk about that with disregard to like, the risk in the scenario. It's like we should all be working towards having a safe work environment. Everyone on set is responsible for like their safety and in each other's safety, as well as like the production as a whole being responsible for everyone's safety. And it's like, yeah. So sometimes it would be cool not to like What's the word for it? There's like a specific word about it, like to not talk about that gratuitously, I guess. Like you can do the thing and you can put like your all into your job and you can show up and do what you're asked and everything. You should just be able to expect your employer to be taking every measure to keep people safe.
Yeah.
It's kind of my thinking.
Definitely.
Because, yeah, I'm like, in no way is it safe to have four vehicles moving towards one person going into a baseball slide. That's so easy to run people over.
I would imagine there would be safety vehicles coming in right behind them, just out of shot.
You'd want to hope so. But I don't know, just the way that, like, the director talked about it on that podcast, it was just, like, very much like...
It sounded like it was one of those things. Everyone was ready
to go do things, and like we really did this, and we really did that, and there was no like, no faking anything, and it's like, yeah, cool.
Oh dear.
You go to work and you hope people don't fuck up their job, but
Yeah.
I feel like if you'd ever met anyone from a picture vehicles team, you were like, I don't know, I just don't have a lot of confidence in people. Not to fuck up their job, especially with picture vehicles. Anyway, I shouldn't say that. They're great. I love them. Cool people. They don't smoke a ton of weed and drink a lot.
Very interesting stories. Very interesting people always have very good stories.
They do. Yeah, I'm going to cut that part out. Anyway, the baseball slide was apparently the Heckland thing. Of course it is.
Mm.
Literally still don't understand the biomechanics of how you do that.
Gravel? Gravel pain, and long
pain?
Pants.
I'm like, pain?
It's yeah, like long pants, you'd still slide pretty well. You might screw your pants, but...
You go fucking go out and go into one of those.
Okay, give me a second.
20 minutes. You come back in and you're fucking scraped to like hell and high water. It's like in rugby, like diving for the try. I'm like, at some point, you're just jumping.
I think I've kind of done a slide like that before. Maybe it's more rugby sort of, horizontal one, but yeah, I think I've moved like that before, at least on grass.
I've thrown myself at the ground and gone, fuck, that hurts. Maybe I was doing it wrong. Anyway, yeah, my note for the scene is, I have two notes. The slide. I'm like, the slide ramps up tension, I guess, but gratuitous use of baseball things? I don't know.
My comment comes in a second.
I guess we should also mention that the Argents are also listening
this
to
chase.
They're listening to police scanners, and they're part of this chase. And Kate is like, you know, because the sheriff is like, the suspect is on foot. Which how you don't realize that someone is supernatural when they're outrunning a vehicle on foot.
Yeah.
Just,
yeah.
You know.
Okay. It might be a giveaway. They're just driving in these police cars going, oh my, this guy's really, really fit and is doing really well. Like, just get that look down at the speedo with it saying like 40 mile an hour or something like that. And you go, oh.
Meanwhile, this guy's fucking outrunning Usain Bolt and like Eliud Kipchoge. Like, you know, he's just like mega sprinting, whatever. But Kate's very confused. Kate's like, what do you mean on foot? And she's very confused because Kate is in pursuit of the Camaro.
Yeah, my question here was, Derek let Scott drive his car?
I guess Derek is like rightly expectant that Scott and Stiles are going to help get him out of the shithole that they landed him in.
Yeah. What do you think Derek's conversation to Scott was when he handed him the key? Don't scratch it.
Yeah, don't fuck my car up. And also don't let me get caught, probably. Like, you did this, you fix it.
Yes, he seems rather pissed with Scott later on, doesn't he?
Yeah. So the scene, like is... you know, cutting back and forth between Scott and Stiles and the Camaro and Derek on foot in this sort of ironworks industrial area thing.
Right next to school.
Apparently right next to the high school. We get like the moment where some dogs are released and get some like, they come back running.
Derek just turns around and glows his eyes at them and they run away.
I was like, why did Derek need to go all Naruto on them?
Just the full arms back.
It was very Naruto.
In a lower posture, would you call that? Something like that.
It was pretty like Naruto stance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Styles and Scott are trying to outrun them. And yeah, Scott's just looking like he's out for a Sunday drive. Like he's he's strolling. And Styles is like, go faster.
He's just like, do you know what my mother will do to me if I speed?
Yeah, he's like really not grasping the concept of car chase.
No.
I had a note about the choice of insert shots with Scott driving the car. So there's like a couple of instances in the scene, mostly when Styles is like, you have to go faster, where Scott, there's like a sound, like a gear shifting, except they just, and then they go to like an insert shot of like an accelerated pedal being depressed. But I'm like, surely this car is an automatic. So what the fuck is Scott changing gear? Because he does like a shoulder motion as well. He's like, you know, he kind of like looks as if he's like really aggressively changing gears.
I mean, maybe it is a manual.
Maybe. But like, we're talking about America. In a modern car.
They do exist. It is meant to be a sports car.
Yeah, maybe. You'd think they'd show like a wider view of the footbox, though, or the footwell. Like,
yeah.
So that you could see that he was operating a clutch as well.
See if you can see three pedals.
Doesn't look like it. You can only see two. Yeah, just
it's more dramatic if you move your arm around.
Yeah. Yeah, if you just like.
No, what he must be doing is he's tapping the Tiptronic on the gear lever.
Maybe he is. Or he's just putting it in sports mode, like left into sports mode or right into sports mode. Then the Argents get in on Derek's runaway, and they start using their like little flashy bulbs.
With like a white, is it like a white? I was trying to decide if it's like a white phosphorus arrow or something like that, but yeah, you don't really know.
Yeah, must be. My note for that was just apparently werewolves should go out in welding helmets.
So Chris was like, right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to dazzle him with my arrows, with my bright, shiny arrows, and then I'm going to pull out my assault rifle and try and shoot at him, apparently very unsuccessfully.
Chris is a terrible sniper. Like,
yeah, he's just literally spraying and praying with his bullets.
Yeah, literally. Also, shooting at the car. I guess they haven't put two and two together yet that, like, it's Scott and Styles that's aiding and abetting Derek. So they don't know. All they know is that they're shooting at Derek's accomplices. They don't know that they're shooting at two teenagers.
Yeah, yeah, they don't know who Derek's accomplices are. Yeah, it's a bit wild.
Yeah, so anyway, like Derek manages to get in the Camaro with Scott and Styles. And it's mostly just filling in what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah, Derek being peeved that Scott told everybody that he hunted them through the school. Yeah. Oh no, and killed everyone who's been dying.
Yeah.
In the town of late.
The scene with like them all in the car. My note for this is just like all paths are leading into one. Dun dun dun.
All paths are leading towards a necklace?
Well, no, like just all of the characters now converging. Like,
yeah.
Allison, because she has the necklace, is getting woven in. We're getting Derek with his backstory woven into now Scott's timeline a little more through this necklace with Allison. I suppose Styles is just along for the ride.
Yeah. And anyone would think that we're heading towards the final episode. Dun, dun,
yeah.
Dun.
Yeah, basically. Because, yeah, Derek is we get like a little need like a little Derek's exposition dump sound effect.
Yeah.
Because
I'm just gonna link everything together in one car scene.
Yeah, yeah. We get Derek's exposition dump, where he basically is like, you know, I just about had the alpha, and all the the only information I'm operating off of is like the last time I spoke to my sister, she mentioned a guy named Harris and this necklace. Harris being a chemistry teacher, Nicholas being Allison's Nicholas. So yeah, just one big old exposition dump to move us towards the final.
All comes together here.
Yeah, I did find it funny how Derek's like super distrusting of Styles and like whatever, but I'm like, Styles is the smart one. Scott's the one that is like continuously fucking you over
and comes up with all the silly ideas
and does not like you.
Yeah. Styles just constantly questions Scott on his ability and just goes like, are you sure?
Yeah.
That's a good idea. Because like, that comes up again in a minute. Yeah, we'll see that when we get there. But yeah, I don't know either. we get a rather intense stare out of Derek looking at Styles going like, why are you talking?
Yeah, like why are you talking to me, peasant?
So then we get Scott and Styles at school, with Scott and Styles trying to work out a plan to get the necklace of Allison.
Yeah, Scott now has his mission for the episode. He has to get Allison's necklace. And I feel like if they put like a little more thought into investigating, this would seem like a little less dire. Like, Scott is lumping, like, I mean, Styles kind of does it jokingly when he says, like, you know, you just have to get this necklace back so that you can track down this alpha werewolf, kill him, and hopefully get the girl back. It's definitely, like, narrowing down his options. Like, they could be a little less, you know, all your eggs in one basket type thing.
Yeah.
They're teenagers.
Do they actually need the necklace, or could they do like a reverse image search on that picture and just pull up like Google images of that necklace?
Yeah, I mean, I guess like you would try to find the item in question, but also, yeah, why not just like investigate the Argent or like investigate the necklace, do a reverse image search? Like, it feels like there are more options than you know, just like get the necklace. But you know,
just steal it.
Drama's sake.
Do you agree with Styles' advice to Scott of just ask Allison for the necklace, or do you think that was very much just played for the humor?
I mean, again, it probably would be the simpler option. Just be like, hey, your
necklace.
Can I borrow
that necklace? It's really interesting. Yeah. What's that about? Tell me about your necklace. Can I have a look at it, please?
I mean,
this is a really nice necklace. Here you go, have it back.
Let me just take a photo of it. I mean, obviously,
is there any cubby holes or anything in it? Any writing on it? Anything like that? No, there's nothing at all. Oh, cool. Here you go. Have it back.
Yeah, you can take that back now. Obviously, they're not like Scott's kind of blocked there because Allison would then ask him why he was so interested in it. So, like, yeah, he's kind of blocked from doing that. But I feel like there would be other options. I was trying to decide, like, I mean, the second half, like the quote-unquote humorous part of the scene is Scott being taken down the rabbit hole of thinking about Allison in the shower. And, like, this is, again, like, I can't remember if Scott ever gets this much level of, like, sort of physical comedy. It's not really physical comedy, but it's kind of, like, a unique brand of comedy because, like, There's just like a solid like 10 seconds where like Tyler Posey is just standing there with like a semi-vacant look on his face, and Styles is just like, you're thinking about her in the shower, aren't you? And he's just like, yeah, I am. And then it's played again with again, like, you're still thinking about it.
You don't get that much play on humor in the later episodes, do you? That kind of play on humor in the later episodes, do you?
Yeah. We then link up with Jackson in the doctor's office.
Yeah. What kind of doctor's office is this? I've never seen a doctor's office like this. This is a rather concerning looking doctor's office to me.
I know. Jackson needs a new doctor.
I know. I think he's spent all the money on the Porsche and he's cheaped out on his doctor.
Yeah, like what kind of... Look, I know from having worked adjacent or in art departments that like what you end up with like for set decorating can be quite random.
Yeah.
Because this exam table looks like semi-archaic. Like they've just got like this weird chin strappy thing instead of like a standard like examination table.
They've just gone, we need to support his head somehow. Let's just strap something on here and it'll be fine.
Yeah, kind of looked looked less like they got it from a medical supply store and more like they got it from like some sort of weird BDSM store.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know, just like had more vibes.
How do a lot of the props get sourced? Is just a lot of it bought or is it stuff people have in lockups and things like that, or a bit of both? Or
yeah, like I guess I can only speak to like how things are done here, but in this country there's just what I describe as like hoarder villages.
Yeah,
where these companies, these prop companies, and they normally do props and set stuff like furniture and shit. It's basically just like these companies that have these big lockups and warehouses of various different pieces of furniture.
And just hire out their crap in a bulk deal.
Yeah. And like, I have no idea if it's the same in other countries, but like generally the structure of like, of the set decorating team or like even the props team is that there'll be like the HOD, which is like the set designer. That's the person participating in like the creative decisions that are going into like designing the set. And then underneath that, like, so they'll be like, okay, we have this scene set in a lab. And we want it to have like this tone and look like this. And this is the function of that the scene serves in the story. They'll do all that thing. And then that information all gets given to like a buyer. And so the person has to go out and like actually source the equipment. And yeah, sometimes that means you go to like these weird lockups and you just go, do you have something that looks like kind of like this?
Or just, can you just go like, I want your stuff that is sort of in this category?
Yeah.
What do you have?
Yeah, basically you just go.
We need to fill a room with this kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And like, I guess if you're Grey's Anatomy, you just like literally buy medical equipment. Like you just go to wherever you buy medical equipment from and you just buy like a fully functioning.
Secondhand medical auctions or something like that.
I don't even think it's secondhand. Like I think like a show that's as big as Grey's Anatomy, like probably literally buys brand new hospital equipment or maybe like, you know, damaged and shipping shit. I don't know, you know.
Or
always trying to save money.
I don't know if medical equipment would have like display stock or like demo stock or something that wouldn't actually work, but yeah
stuff like that. But if you have less money, at least here, if you like in this country, if you have less money available to you, then you have to go to these prop houses and be like, what do you have that's like kind of like this, which is how you can end up with like a hospital set that looks like it's from like Days of Our Lives or like Days of Our Lives in like the 1990s or like, you know, or like, you know, General Hospital or whatever. Like you get really old stuff, or you try to go to a location and you go to a private hospital and or in some cases a vet clinic, like
go maybe to a vet. That's what happened here, looking at this this room that Jackson's in.
Yeah, to be fair, like this is probably some kind of like location. It's generally cheaper if you have like only one location to just pay the location rental fee and shoot there or whatever.
One of my funnest, most entertaining things to do on set is just have a look around at what set deck has set out, and just look at all the random stuff and just be like, and just look at some of it and just go, where on this, where on this earth did you find this stuff? And why did you decide to put it in here?
Well, I mean, like, people like buyers and stuff, they, like, their unique skill set is just knowing where to source stuff that the average person doesn't. It's always cool to, like, talk to them about, like, where they've been in their day, and, like, what weird place they've gotten stuff from. I don't know. They've got a cool and interesting job.
I specifically asked an art director one day where they got the carcass of a plane from.
Oh, yeah.
It was a carcass of a plane just turned up one day. So you know, I was around in the art department, and I just asked them, I was like, where'd you get that plane from? Where do you even go to find something like that?
Buy a broken plane.
And they were just like, oh, trade me, which is our version of eBay. And I was just like,
oh, the answer is always eBay. Or if it's not like eBay, it's like, oh, I know this weird guy that I've known for 20 years who had just happened to have like a junkyard full of stuff. There's a lot of stuff like that where it's just, someone knows someone who knows someone. But yeah, Jackson, it's like a kind of a weirdly ominous scene, this one.
Yeah, this gets quite freaky.
Yeah, because it's like doctors asking like these kind of leading questions.
And Jackson's just apparently really affected by these scratch marks in the back of his head.
Yeah, I had a note about that. Like, I don't know if we, again, I genuinely actually can't remember. I know what I think has happened, but I actually don't know if it's been explicitly stated in the story, because Jackson's basically saying that he has Derek's memories.
Yeah.
Which you are then to, is then like, that's implied that they were transferred to him through the claw marks. And you know that Jackson's having some sort of like supernatural side effect, because he was in pain when in the previous episode, I'm sorry, in 107, when the Alpha like tried to, when the Alpha Force got to shift. Yeah. So it's like, it's weird. It's weird that Jackson's had this reaction that Jackson's having is quite strange.
Oh, yeah, no, sorry. It was when the Alpha Force got to shift, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, the scene just has, like, the typical Teen Wolf kind of, like, grimness to it, where Jackson obviously has some sort of, like, like, he either falls asleep, has a nightmare, or he's hallucinating or whatever, because the Doctor ends up being, like, kind of menacing in a way. Yeah. And ends up pulling out
like a wolf's bane root or something like that.
Yeah, it's really it grossed me out.
Yeah, it's very uncomfortable. But what we do find out at the end of this scene is that Jackson has been infected by wolf's bane, which I suppose makes sense, because Derek was infected with wolf's bane when he scratched Jackson.
True, actually. I didn't make that link, but that is true. Well, it's like presumably the only way that Jackson could have aconite poisoning, right? Because he's not like come into contact with it otherwise.
Yeah.
That we've seen. And even the kind of like forcep things that they have look like claws. Like metal claws.
Would that actually be used to something like that actually be used to investigate a scab or something like that? Or was this just used to make this scene more freaky? Like,
yeah, I feel like it was made for the scene.
Yeah, it's slightly crazy.
Yes, like, it's gross.
Yeah, it's not nice.
Yeah, the like stuff being pulled out of him really grossed me out.
Yeah. But also, it's not like he's like secured to the table or anything like that, right? So it's like, how did he not just, get up.
You get the weird cut of like Derek being in the scene as well, which kind of weirded me out.
It still links to how Jackson's like completely freaked out by Derek though.
Yeah. But then Jackson wakes up, the lighting changes. It's no longer ominous. Jackson gets told that he has aconite poisoning, which I was like, is this what clues Jackson into like the fact that Scott's a werewolf? It must be.
Yeah, I think it is, because he suddenly gets all of a sudden very, very confident as to what Scott is. Oh, no, actually, sorry. It happens in the next scene when he finally makes the link as to what Scott is.
Does it?
Because he looks up Wolfsbane.
That's right. My only note for the scene between Jackson, and Melissa is, again, Melissa is the only one who works in this hospital.
Yep. She is literally running this hospital. Apart from this doctor that we will never see again.
Yeah.
And also, why did Melissa let Jackson onto a hospital computer?
Yeah, I guess it's because he fools her into thinking he's one of Scott's friends. But Melissa doesn't seem like that kind of person.
No. It's and like there are patient records. Like, it literally shows there are patient records on there when it cuts back to the computer screen.
Yeah, it's
I wouldn't even think. I wouldn't even think Melissa would let Scott on that computer.
No, same. And we stay with Jackson as he goes to talk to Scott, and he's just like super cocky in the fact that he knows what Scott is.
I just got Jackson is now so Mr. Confident. He's just he's just so happy and so confident in himself.
Well, he's probably feeling quite a lot of relief, maybe.
Yeah, well, considering how down he's been for the last couple of episodes, it's kind of great.
Although he's so arrogant that I just don't give a fuck.
Yeah, this is true. I don't enjoy it for that, but it's just, I suppose it's just nice to see him in a better mood considering how he has been. But yeah, no, his arrogance is definitely annoying. But it's like, oh, we're back to arrogant Jackson, finally.
And Scott has like the worst poker face in that situation.
Yeah, he does. He's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, I have a problem with the next scene.
Do you?
Because, so Stiles and Scott are discussing that Jackson knows, but then, like, Stiles rightly points out, Jackson hasn't actually said what he knows. He's just been very, very foreboding almost about what he knows. And like, he's not letting on everything that he knows. So it's just like, just stay quiet until he actually reveals what he knows.
This is like the old trick of bluff your way into getting the person to admit the information.
Yeah. Find out what they know.
Yeah. Really, Scott should,
follow Stiles' advice.
Yeah. Fake him out a bit more. But, Scott has the worst poker face.
And is just easily jumping to conclusions, which, Stiles is telling him not to do.
Scott is also super easily manipulated by anything to do with Allison. Like, he's so fixated in getting her back that if he just had, like, a little bit of a broader scope of his situation, he might actually operate in his best interests rather than just what he thinks are his best interests.
Oh, yeah, we have him being so creepy towards Allison in this episode, right? Him trying to get her back and things like that. And I just look at this episode and I kind of go, How did he get away with this shit?
This is the 16-year-old operating.
Yeah, definitely.
With that scene with Scott and Stiles, we also get, like, I guess Scott has like a reasonable point that like it's not Jackson telling Allison that's the problem. Actually, Jackson telling Allison might help Scott's case, even though he doesn't understand that or can't comprehend that. It's telling Allison's father that would be the dire circumstances for him. Yeah. Which, like, that is a bit of a roadblock, a sizable one. I still don't, even though I've watched this episode, I still don't know what Siles' plan is with Derek. Like, it makes it sound like he has an actionable plan with Derek.
What was the lines again?
Well, he was like, Stiles was like, I have a plan, but it involves Derek. So I'll get back to you on it, basically.
Is this when he's formulating the highlight of this episode?
Maybe. We'll see when we get there.
Like,
I'm trying to remember, but I'm bad with, I'm not like at that point in my notes. We cut into, as you mentioned, the scene with in a classroom where we're back on Scott's journey for the episode. He's got to get the necklace. Scott's so obtuse in this scene. Like, he basically like positions himself as close to Allison as he can, but Lydia's a good friend and she roadblocks him.
I did get that note as well.
Yeah, my note was like, at least Lydia's a good friend sometimes.
Yeah, when it suits her. Although Allison is showing that she's somewhat interested in talking to Scott. And then Scott pulls a massive dick move.
Yeah, well, I feel like Allison is trying to do the whole, like, you know, we broke up because of circumstance, not like because feelings had gone away. So, like, we should just try and keep this amicable and, you know, I'm not going to hate on him. Like, so she just, like, very much feels like she's trying to, like, keep the peace.
Yeah.
And then, and, like, deal with it the best that she can. And Scott's just, like, wildly insensitive. And is like, I've got this thing that I need to share with you. And she's like, okay. You know.
Considering how he has been in the previous episodes, where he has actually been quite sensitive, is kind of a flip on his personality, really.
Yeah, it did feel like kind of like he was making a massive like faux pas that maybe wasn't in his character.
Mm.
But I don't know. I kind of just think that like he's so fixated.
He's just, that desperate to get her back or something.
Well, I feel like he thinks that like he can just solve the literal problem and that once he solves the problem, everything will like revert back to normal and they can go on with their lives or whatever, which is a very narrow-minded view of the situation.
No, get the girl back.
Yeah, like he texts, and he's even got like a weird, like, he's like watching for her reaction. And she's just like horrified. And like, Allison's like rightly quite upset and Scott's very I don't even know if he's actually confused or if he just like is so insensitive that he keeps on keeping on with his plan.
Yeah, because then she's very obviously upset and then he follows her out.
Yeah, he's still like just chasing her down. Although I didn't quite get the teacher's line. I mean, I've not read Iago, but
English teacher throwing some shade.
Well, I feel like they were just making a reference because I'm like, what part? Like, jealousy doesn't really play anything into the situation. It's just like a romantic. It's not even a quarrel, really. It's just like this disconnect, I guess, between them.
I suppose she's just the teacher at least is just kind of pulling from what she's seeing.
Yeah, maybe. This is the song that I recognized.
I did look this up as well.
I think it's William Fitzsimmons.
Yep. I Don't Feel It Anymore by William Fitzsimmons /Lonely.
Yeah, this guy writes like the fucking like saddest breakup music ever.
Oh, that is sad. And
I mean, at least Scott has the good sense to feel bad.
Allison pulls it off, pulls that high tone, incredibly hurt tone off very well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like this, believe that.
I feel like this was like a more dramatized version of like Troy and Gabriella breaking up in High School Musical. With like the I gotta go my own way type thing. I feel like you could overlay that music.
Because it happens a lot quicker than High School Musical. High School Musical has a song to go through, a whole song to go through as well.
Fucking love High School Musical.
Yeah, it's great.
Styles and Food is just like ridiculous.
This is how I think. Hum, 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 hum.
Yeah, they're in the cafeteria and they're kind of like going through, they're breaking down what's just happened. And yeah, Styles is just chomping on these chicken tenders.
Which while he's talking.
I mean, to be fair, if I was eating in-scene food, which is probably like stone cold and like I don't know, gross as
this
fuck.
This is the thing. You kind of hope they don't do many takes for this, especially if he's got food in his mouth. It's
well,
like,
that's the thing. I'd be trying to chew it as slowly as possible, like talking with my mouth open, like just one bite every few seconds, like until you can get to the spit bucket.
Oh, yeah. Slightly crazy.
Especially these chicken tendy things. Well, that's why they look like they are anyway.
American cafeterias, man.
Yeah, but Styles does have a good point with his plan B. He's like, just steal it. Like, which that's a way better plan. I don't know why Scott didn't go with that in the first place. Just steal it. It's so much easier.
Yeah.
Don't have to have any emotional drama. Just a little theft.
You're a werewolf. You're quick, right?
Yeah.
Styles always just has better plans and better ideas.
I did have a note, which is kind of like relating to like the language of the time. They say something where I think like Scott says something about Allison going psycho on him, which I was like confused about because I was like, she didn't go nuts or psycho whatever on him. Like she really like acted quite appropriately.
Actually, I have the script open in front of me. Styles says, did you find out anything else? Then Scott says, just that I know nothing about girls and they're totally psychotic. To which, Styles says, okay, I came up with plan B in case this happens. What's plan B? Steal the stupid thing.
Yeah.
So Scott says that.
My note on that is just like, the 2010s language sucks. Like, Allison did not go psychotic on him.
No, she didn't. She very clearly and succinctly laid out her feelings to Scott, going like, what are you trying to do? Why would you send me those pictures?
Yeah, and was just like, please leave me alone. Like, I just was like, the language of the time, like, sucks.
Yeah.
It's definitely not something you can say now. And also just even like to interpret that, like that's like, that really speaks to like young men taking something going the way that they, something going away the way other than how they wanted it, just to like the next level and not being able to be like, well, just because it didn't go the way I wanted doesn't mean the other person's actions are psychotic.
Yeah. How much of that could you just reflect on Scott's mood, though, that he is kind of just saying that in the moment, I suppose. Not to sound like I'm defending him, but I suppose I am. Yeah, that he's just... he's literally just grumpy that things didn't go his way, so he's decided to call Allison psychotic.
Yeah, which, he's like deflecting.
She very clearly wasn't, but
deflecting his own misbehavior in that scene. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like shit like that was like pretty rampant when we were teenagers. Of just like people being like, well, that's not how I wanted it to go, so that person's just fucked up or is nuts or is psycho, is like a freaking psycho. And it's like,
I think that actually is like part of the development of the brain and things like that, that teenagers do find it a lot more difficult to think outside themselves.
Probably. But I also think it speaks to society.
Maybe that's younger than teenagers. Yeah, I can't actually remember, but yeah, possibly as well. I hope it's got better. Do you think it's got better?
I think people have gotten a lot more careful, at least on TV, about the language that they have to use here. I don't know. I'm like a pretty big advocate of like trying to be careful about your language. Like, I mean, and like, you know, not that I've ever been perfect about it. Like, we both grew up in the era of like, if something was silly or stupid, we would just be like, oh, that's so gay. And like, now it's like, you know, sometimes I still catch myself like deflecting into that mode where like, you know, yeah, I'll just be like, oh, fuck, that's so gay. And it's like, what are you saying? Like, how have you suddenly regressed like 15 years? You know, that's, it's like, for Christ's sakes, like, you know that that's not a thing. But it's like when you're a kid and in the early 2000s and stuff, like everything was fucking just, that's so gay. And it's like, it's like, just, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Nowadays I like try to be like as conscious about like marrying my intention with my language choices. Cause yeah, it's otherwise you just like, otherwise what ends up in the vernacular just means you end up saying shit that like, one, you just 100% don't mean, and you know, two, like, just isn't like even true. Actually communicating yet, isn't true, isn't communicating the message you should be trying to communicate. I'm pretty sure you could probably go back like early enough and find like that's so gay on TV. Not that I can think of an example, but like I'm sure it's probably out there. But yeah,
it's rather sad.
It is. Scott sucks in the scene.
He does.
Scott sucks in his interactions with Allison there.
Yes.
Within that scene, we also get Jackson continuing his manipulation and blackmail of Scott.
I just didn't like
the scene. Was annoying.
I know. I'm kind of just like, was a bit just like, Skip.
Yeah, although, I was just like, ugh. And my practical note for this scene is just Jackson's sitting at a table with other people. So wouldn't the other people be able to hear Jackson talking to himself?
Or is he whispering?
Even then, like, if someone was just started whispering to themselves right next to you.
Talking under his voice or something like that.
He's just sitting at a cafeteria table.
And just kind of like, Scott. Like barely even verbalizing what he's saying and just going, Scott.
That would make it even worse. If someone just started like whispering under their breath, like kind of in my general vicinity, I'd definitely be looking at them.
Suppose that's the point of speaking under your breath, that you can't hear them. But what I didn't get with this scene is how Scott didn't know where Jackson was.
Yeah.
Because he's shown before that he can very easily tell which direction sound is coming from.
Yeah. He's just like so consumed. Yeah, my note for this is like Scott so easily manipulated, and I guess those anger issues are still lingering.
Very, very emotional.
Jackson is also just gross in this dialogue. Like,
yeah. That's
Like, he's basically
horrific.
He's basically taunting Scott with, like, the idea of him, like, having sex with Allison. Which I guess we're now meant to presume that Jackson presumes that, like, Scott and Allison didn't sleep together. Which I kind of thought the show was leaving. I kind of thought the show was leaving that, like, ambivalent.
Hmm.
Like, with the, what do I call them? The late night license scenes. You could presume either way that something had happened.
True. But yeah, I suppose it lays out more that Scott and Allison have only made out.
They've like hooked up or whatever.
Which I suppose that's in line with what we've seen, because those scenes normally get interrupted.
That is true. I mean, I guess they the show normally does like the typical sex scene montage. They do the hookup and then they cut straight to after. But so I guess we haven't seen one of those. But like, yeah, I don't know, Jackson.
My only other thing with that scene was Jackson calls Scott cheating because of his werewolf enhancements, or says that Scott is cheating because of his werewolf enhancements. And I'm like, is it? Or is it just like an enhanced puberty? And also it's just like, it's not like it's something that he wanted to happen.
It's not like he's like gone out of his way and is taking like steroids.
Yeah.
Like Jackson thought. Like, it'd be cheating if he was taking steroids, but like, he didn't ask for this.
But this is clearly what Jackson wants to do. He's like, I'm going to take any advantage that I can get, and I want what Scott has. But yeah.
I wonder if in the writer's room, when they were like sort of breaking that scene and like what Jackson was going to say to them, if they were like intentionally going for like that kind of possessive angle of like what's going to trigger, like if they were going for like a more sort of, I hate to use the word animalistic, but maybe that's like the only appropriate one. Like, if they were targeting, if Jackson's dialogue was targeting that side of Scott, like going for like possession and ownership and whatever, which it does seem out of character for Scott, but is possibly in character for like the struggles that he's had with like the werewolf anger management and stuff.
Yeah.
Like when he does get like all wolfy, he gets like super emotionally unstable and angry and like obsessed with Allison.
And very, very on character for Jackson, how manipulative he wants to be with Scott and things like that.
But I guess that presumes that Jackson's pretty smart to know to just assume all of this information about werewolves.
I suppose that doesn't necessarily not mean that he's not socially intelligent.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe he just did like a werewolf wiki and read some really intense fan fiction and decided to go with that trope.
What, he looked up the Wolfsbane flower on Melissa's computer and now all of a sudden knows that Scott's a werewolf?
Yeah. And then maybe he Googled it and got some big man on campus stuff. Is that what that show's called? That's what that show's called, right? Big man on campus. Like that.
Yeah, so he's managed to put so he's managed to put together that claws in the back of his neck, Scott getting better at lacrosse, and a wolf bane flower means that Scott's a werewolf.
Yeah.
Although Scott did unload to him on still that first episode, he was like, I can see, hear, and smell things that I've never been able to do before.
Yeah. Maybe he remembered that. Yeah, I don't know. I don't love Jackson in this season.
No. He's not pleasant.
Annoying, but I find it like, I do enjoy like Colton Haynes. Oddly enough, I really like Jackson in the reboot movie.
He's, you know what he feels like in the reboot movie?
What?
A
skeptical.
He feels like a well-rounded adult.
Yeah. In the movie, Jackson felt like me watching the movie.
Yeah, he feels like someone who's who has had to deal with a lot of shit in his life, and he's finally gotten over it and has just become a sensible, well-rounded adult.
Yeah, maybe spoilers for the movie, but and not that it's an actual spoiler because it's a presumed thing, but maybe Jackson went to therapy.
Maybe. Have we said that before? Because I constantly end up thinking that that's what he needs.
Oh yeah, Jackson needs some serious therapy. We've definitely said that before. Yeah,
definitely.
He's got many issues. From that cafeteria scene, we end up with Jackson and Allison in the pool. Which one? This high school has a massive pool.
They do. Do we actually see any kind of like school training in this pool or anything like that?
The pool was so random, and I didn't really understand why they went to the pool. Aside from the fact that it's like an instance in which Allison would be away from her bags and that Scott could rifle through her things. Like, yeah, that's an obvious thing. Yeah. But like, in terms of practicalities for filming, a pool seems like a really unfortunate choice.
I suppose the other question with this pool is like, what are they doing in this pool? Is it like, are they in this pool on their lunch break or something like that?
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like they're in like a gym class or anything like that. They're just like casually swimming laps, having a chat almost. Yeah. So do Allison and Jackson just go swimming on their lunch break together?
They're just like, so you know what we can do for lunch?
Well, their free period or something.
Yeah.
I was confused from a story element, and then I was confused by the practicalities for a filming thing, because filming in pools sucks.
Mm.
It's hot, it's humid, the chlorine makes you fucking loopy.
Got to keep the camera away from the water.
Yeah, a gear becomes like an issue. It's like a slipping and a tripping hazard mm. for crew. Like,
does that mean someone's got to be out there with a towel wiping all the water down whenever someone comes in and out and things like that?
I don't know, but I filmed a total of 2 days in a pool. One day in like an indoor swimming pool.
Yeah.
One, I felt like I was high from the chlorine the whole day. The camera was stressing their fucking pants off about all of the thing, all of the camera and the waters, the water. It was just a hassle for everyone involved. And then, if it's not a heated pool, depending on the temperature and the time of the year, then the actors are going to freeze their fucking pants. Like, well, not wearing pants, but like the actors are going to freeze their asses off.
Mm.
And then you have to worry about them turning into prunes if it takes too long to the shot. Like, it's all very
dry them out again and then put them back in.
I mean, hair and makeup just end up stressing because they're like, we can't do anything with that. Like, what the fuck? They're wet.
It's just stressful days all around.
Yeah, it just seems like a strange choice when I can't think of like any logical story element aside. Yeah, it just didn't make any sense. Or the sense that it did make was so tedious that I was like, why?
I think we've been through this before, though, and it's really easy to write internal pull on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Yeah, on a script, it's really easy to write internal pull.
Yeah, I wonder about that because obviously, like, at the time that we're recording this, like, the WGA is striking still. And, like, I follow a lot of writers on social media, and I have done for, like, quite a long time. And I have, like, sort of tangentially followed some conversations where they do talk about, like, the writers being aware of these things. And it just didn't really seem to marry up. I would be curious to know what the actual, like, if there was an actual reason. Like, maybe a scene got cut or something was meant to go a slightly different way. But, like, I'm like, because you could have just put them in an indoor gym. Like, you could have just put them in a fitness center.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Scott could have gone by the lockers.
Anything that would have needed her to, just drop her bag.
Yeah, or Scott could have just broken into her locker and rifled through her locker. Like, and if you wanted to have, like, I don't know. I also didn't understand, like, how does Allison and Jackson not see Scott up in the stands rifling through her bags?
Oh, yeah, I didn't understand that either.
Yeah.
It's like, why is her bag not within like sight of the pool?
Yeah, and didn't like there's a bunch of other students around in the bleachers. Like, did they not like think it was strange that this man was like, this boy was like suspiciously like looking, like Scott looks pretty suspicious doing it.
He's literally looking around at the people around him to make sure they're not looking at him.
Yeah, and they're so close, like they're right behind her.
Yeah. And then we get Jackson kind of playing up to Scott to try and get Scott to give him what he wants.
Yeah, Jackson is basically just like continuously manipulating Scott.
Everybody around him? Well, yeah, well, Scott and Allison.
And like, I guess maybe like the only other thing you could say is like they're in the pool, so less clothes are on, and Jackson's being kind of like flirty and like kind of like, if you didn't know his motivation, you would think he was making a move on Allison, or like flirting with, like actively flirting with her, like, you know, doing the whole like, you know, they do like a cute like little splash and a push underwater, and towel, like Jackson Giggles wraps the towel around her.
My note for this was just Jackson playing all of the cards and showing off.
Yeah, he's playing some chess with Scott.
Yeah. Jackson's just so happy.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I get fed up with Jackson in this episode because we stay with Jackson for so long. Like, Jackson kind of like really takes up like this, you know, sort of first part of the middle part of the episode. You know, we have him with the cafeteria and then the pool, and then we go straight into him and Lydia.
Yeah.
Breaking up. Like, they're a couple of like 50-year-old upper class Wisteria Lane divorcees.
I really enjoyed this scene because we've talked before about how unhealthy their relationship has been. So I was just like, actually, good on Jackson. I mean, okay, he's doing it for his own horrible manipulative purposes, etc., etc., etc. But also, good on Jackson.
I mean, I sort of came at it from like the, well, at least Lydia is free of him. because Jackson is just like, Jackson breaks up with her in like a super like not great way, because basically Jackson's like
over text
and then his comments are basically like, I'm making room for some new things in my life, and I'm dropping some dead weight and you're it.
It definitely wasn't the nicest breakup in the world.
It sucks that it happened. Well, it did need to happen, but it like sucks that Lydia is like, I didn't like that Lydia got flustered, because I was like, no, Lydia, you deserve better. Like you're a smart and capable person, and Jackson is a piece of shit. Be happy that you're dropping his dead weight.
Is this just more her reflecting on being the dumpy instead of the dumper?
But yeah, I'm sure if Lydia dumped Jackson, she would probably be a little
as about over the moon as he is.
Yeah. I mean, these two are terrible for each other, so you know, it's good that they're breaking up.
Yeah, I suppose Lydia does at least put on a strong face to Jackson, or at least attempts to.
I don't know if I read it that way. Like, to me, Lydia seemed flustered and kind of like,
yeah, well, that's what her strong face is. It is her. Yeah, maybe I just kind of see it as both, but yeah, her. Yeah,
I feel
her
like
response to Jackson is trying to stand on the high foot, but also failing at the same time, which means she does come across as being flustered by it.
Yeah, I'm like, Lydia, one day, girl, you will realize that you deserve better. And then Jackson will realize some other things about himself and will be in a different show.
Lydia don't need no man.
Nope. We cut into the infamous scene, the gift scene. The scene that if you were to put Styles or Derek's name into any Tumblr search bar, you'll probably at some point come up with a gift set for this for this scene. How do we talk about the scene? The scene.
Describe it. Describe it.
I feel like this scene has two... The scene almost has... I mean, it's more than one scene, but it kind of has, like, two parts initially, and then, like, a third part. Yeah, the scene has, like, two parts. The first part is Styles' interactions with his dad, which are, like, hilarious.
Well, that's... Yeah, well, that's the same, like, reassuring cuteness that we get between Styles and his father. Well, not cuteness, but yeah, like goodness of their relationship and whatnot. The sheriff is so proud and happy for Styles. He's on the first line and, you know, really keen to see him on his first game on the first line, his first game on the first line. And Styles, on his way out to talk to his father, has seen that Derek is hiding in the corner of his room. So he's just awkwardly there the whole time, just going like, yeah, I need to finish this conversation as soon and as quickly as I can. Love you, Dad. I'm just going to make this conversation really awkward, which to me, I kind of went, Styles' dad is the sheriff?
Yeah.
How does he not know what suspicious behavior looks like?
I mean, maybe it's just that, like, Styles is so, like, flailing and awkward anyway that, like, they, like, the sheriff just sort of goes with it. And also, you kind of get the sense that, like, even though they're close, and they have, like, you know, like a really close, like, bond, they're maybe not, like, the most talkative with those feelings. So,
yeah,
you know, because the sheriff is kind of like a little bit awkward as well about, like,
yeah, that's fair,
his approach to being like, you know he's like a good dad, so he's gonna be like,
yeah, he's gonna be like, I'm proud of you, I want to come to the game and watch you, and
yeah, like, I've got time off work, and I mean, I don't know if he says that he's got time off work or whatever, like, you know, he's presumably a busy man, so he's probably had
He has a town to run that has a spate of murders that he's investigating, and, you know, a fugitive to catch, and things like that.
That's sitting on the opposite side of that wall.
Yeah, exactly.
I did have a chuckle because, I mean, you kind of have to look closely to notice it, but when Styles gets up and, like, throws himself into the doorway, you can see the whole wall move. And I was like,
I didn't catch that.
Yeah. That's amusing. It was like the whole thing just kind of has like a back and forth flex to it. I mean, cause I don't know anything about, like, I don't think anyone's actually, like, and I mean, to be fair, why would they? Like, no one's talked about, like, where they filmed or what kind of stages they had, what kind of space they had. All you know is that they didn't have a lot of money in the first season, so presumably not a lot of space. Yeah, I found the door, the whole wall moving, quite funny. I can imagine, like, another situation where, like, the scene is, like, if Dylan O'Brien had gone into that wall any harder, he probably would have gone straight through the wall.
Do you not know there's not a take where that happens?
That would be hilarious. The second part of this scene is when Styles goes back inside and Derek like immediately bail him up? Yeah, Derek immediately bails Styles up against the door.
Yeah.
And gets in his face. And is just like...
Which Styles has a very good comeback.
Yeah, Derek is just like, if you say one word, and Styles is like, oh, you mean like, hey, Dad, Derek Hale's in my room.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know that guy that you're looking for?
Yeah, he's like right here. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
Oh, dear. Oh dear. Yeah, these two
are,
you go.
So good together.
Yeah. Yeah, the and I mean, look, I think I've tried to be subtle. Tried not to say it explicitly. But I think it's probably pretty obvious that I am a Steric shipper.
Look, there's a reason that these two get shipped together, and this scene shows why. Because they are just fabulous together. I think a lot of the time their interaction tends to be Derek comes on to Styles as such the big gruff hard man, and Styles just asked him, I suppose, how he acts to everyone, where he's just like, I don't know how to deal with this. But I don't know, they just, those two interactions with each other tend to work so well. These two are just fabulous together. We get when Derek decides to stop pushing Styles up against the wall, he sort of goes like, oh, okay, you made a very good point that I don't want you to tell your father that I'm here, so he straightens his jacket. And then Styles is the reply to that. And part of the physical humor also straightens Derek's jacket.
Yeah.
Which I'm just like, oh my God, these two are fabulous together.
Yeah, the comedy definitely is in how much of a kind of a hard ass Derek is trying to be at the start of the show, and then how Styles is like just
the exact opposite. Yeah,
he's so not a hard ass, but he's also not afraid. Like, I mean, he's afraid, but like he's not like shying away from that. So it's like he's just kind of has that perpetual pushing the button type feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Styles' solution to everything and part of his personality is just to ramble on about everything, right? So to ramble on about everything and to be funny and humorous about everything.
Yeah.
And that is completely the anti-style of Derek, where Derek is to be quiet and gruff,
broody.
And if he does and broody, and if he is to say anything, then it's only ever normally to tell people off or something like that.
It's like borderline monosyllabic. It is funny, like Derek's like
two
intimidation tactics as well,
because
he doesn't,
two personalities play off on each other so well.
Yeah. You know, also, like, I think Derek doesn't really try. Like, Derek is, like, overall kind of broody and gloomy and, like, a creeper.
Yeah.
But he's not, like, so. He's got a very different vibe with Scott.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Which I think is why people maybe latched on to, latched on to this as a ship. Because, like, I always come at, like, non-canon ships from like kind of like a differing perspective. Like I can see how this dynamic would end up, could very easily have been like, you know, different show, different time, whatever the fuck it needs to be. How the same character setup could lead into like a romantic situation. Because if you take fan fiction, they just take those same elements and they just plug it into a situation where that's like viable. I don't know. I might cut that out. Actually, I don't know if I need to explain why I look at fan fiction. The other, I can't take credit for this because I saw it on like one of those, I don't know what you call them. They're kind of like those comedy kind of like they're not mashups, but like they're like scene compilation videos. But I watched like one of them that was all of the Styles and Derek scenes. And you know that music that like is common on those YouTube videos where it's like do 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 do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like one of those
videos. Like royalty free standard music that you can get. Yeah.
Yeah. Which kind of now, I don't know if it has a comedic element to it or if now it's just like, to me, seems like it's got a comedic element to it. But anyway, it's one of those videos where it was like one of those. And the person in that video pointed out that maybe the actors did their own damage in this scene. Because I guess they're, like, standing really close together, so it would be really weird if they just, like, stared into each other's eyes for, like, the entire duration of the scene, which they don't. Both of them keep looking down, and so someone was like, Styles, why do you keep looking down at Derek's mouth and then back up at his eyes and then back down at his mouth?
Well, like, look at the freeze frame that we have.
Oh, yeah.
Like, okay, so Derek is, yeah, very intensely telling Styles off. But Styles fully has what would you call that? Like dreamy eyes or like dreamboat eyes or something
he's
like that? Like,
he's looking at his mouth.
He's just
almost
like,
as if he wants to be pushed up against a wall for a different reason.
Quite possibly.
I mean, this is like, this is just the steric shit show, right? Like the...
This is where, so if Steric hadn't happened by this point, which actually we've gone back, we've checked, Steric yes. was already happening by this point, but
yeah.
You'd imagine Steric has just exploded with this scene.
Oh yeah, we should check again. Yeah, we both looked on archive of our own what the air date or what the publishing date for like the first fan fiction was, and it was in line with 104.
Which was
the first kind of like
Styles and Derek's big scene together, and when Derek first took off his shirt, wasn't it?
Yeah, which like I mean, like come on, like that's gonna generate some internet. They took his shirt off to generate internet like commentary.
I can imagine the content exploded with this episode though, especially looking at the viewer count.
Yeah, like, I know the viewer count is like ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like a match made in showrunner hell. That's how I describe it. Like, it's got the unfortunate, because like if you look at it, like Styles is definitely like the sidekick character. Like he.
Yeah.
Even when you
he's the Robin, as he's called himself before.
Yeah, not that he wants to be Robin; he wants to be Batman. But like, he is the Robin.
Yeah.
And then both Derek and Scott compete for main character energy.
Yeah.
So it's like he pairs so well with both, but somehow with Scott, they've gone for this really pure like friendship. Founded off the fact that they've known each other for a really long time, and they have like similar family dynamic and. Some little life experience and whatever. And for some reason with Styles and Derek, they just went for like fear that maybe some kind of weird attraction.
Yeah.
Not weird attraction, but like they I don't know. It's just
maybe they just really the two actors just really enjoyed scenes together.
Maybe I mean,
and it showed on screen.
I mean, yeah, I feel like Tyler Hoechlin's the one who like fucking keeps stoking that fire. Like Dylan O'Brien's like, team will stay away from me. move on with my life. And then every time someone asks Hoechlin what he liked about Teen Wolf, he's always like, I really like the style scenes. And it's like, are you the one doing this? Like,
maybe they just really, or yeah, but, or maybe Tyler Hoechlin just really enjoyed scenes with.
I mean, it looks like a ton of fun. Like anything like this is a ton of fun. Like,
yeah.
You. Even
you get to push another person against a wall.
Yeah, when I think of like the stuff that is actually genuinely funny or like amusing to watch on set, like anyone who's ever said anything about being on a set will tell you that like it's fun for about 5 minutes and then it's tedious as fuck after that because the same thing just happens over and over again. But there are like those types of scenes that are like, you know, genuinely funny, like genuinely interesting to watch happen in front of you. I feel like this is one of those.
Yeah.
It would be genuinely like
genuinely
having a giggle. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You do get those moments, and those moments are great.
Mm.
I don't know. I just find myself watching the acting sometimes, and I go, that's why these people are paid so much. and you really do get captivated by the acting. Or I find that I really do get captivated by their acting. And I just go, this is actually really good.
Yeah. Every now and again, you do have those moments where you're like, oh, this is why I do what I do and you do what you do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because, I think, like, yeah, Styles and Derek have a great dynamic. It's funny as fuck. And I think something like that's, I think something that I've thought about, like, fair amount, because, you know, it's like, sometimes I feel like this happens accidentally. You know, you get two actors who have great chemistry and that wasn't intentional. And so then it becomes something that just, like, happens almost.
Mm.
But with Styles and Derek, I do feel like it's on the page. Like, I do feel like, I think it's them as well. Like, I think they have, they have great on-screen chemistry, and, like, the way, you know, the way each of them play their characters lends to, hilarity.
So you almost think it becomes that, like, combination of both, like, that really almost ends up being like a deadly combination of it both being on the page and their chemistry together.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Styles, especially when you've, like, add in all of the shit about, like, Styles' character making, like, you know, am I attractive to gay guy obsession type commentary. It's
it just reinforces the point.
It reinforces the point a little bit. And just, I think, like, the archetypes of their characters work pretty well together. Mm. Because, like, if you look at it, like, the sidekick energy character is either going to, like, generally that is the trope. The sidekick character, like, normally does hook up with the main character. Kind of, I think, anyway. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair.
Or to, like, throw in a Dawson's Creek reference, this is the accident where Joey and Dawson were meant to be endgame, but Pacey and Joey had all the chemistry. And so maybe Styles and Derek are the Pacey and Joey of this world. I don't know. It's funny.
That's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, I don't know. It cracks me up.
Well,
that's the second half of this scene. Also, just anytime they're like 3 inches apart and they're holding eye contact, like, audiences are primed to be like, now kiss.
Yeah. Their physical interactions as well is just like it's not just verbal humor. There's so much physical humor, and I suppose that even translates to physical chemistry.
Yeah, I feel like Styles brings out, like, the physical comedy in Derek's character as well.
Yeah,
like, Styles has a ton of physical comedy with anyone, anywhere, anytime. Like, that's his vibe. But Derek is, like, a very stationary character, unless he's, like, being chased or whatever. He's like, let me stand at the back of this frame, look like a creeper, or let me, like, abuse someone physically.
And let me sit here brooding or something like that.
Yeah. But it's only when you stick him in a scene with Styles that seems to change.
Yeah. He comes out of his shell.
Yeah, which is all a recipe for...
Styles makes him a better person.
Oh. Oh dear. Yeah, the third part to that scene is that you, like, very much get the sense that Derek is now having to work with them to solve this mystery.
Yeah. Styles has convinced him that maybe teamwork is the dream work and they need to actually work together.
Yeah, which kind of seems like at odds with the fact that, like, at the start of this episode, Derek doesn't want Styles to have anything to do with the information that he's imparting in that Camaro, the scene in the Camaro.
That's true.
But now he's in Styles' bedroom. Like, I mean, I guess it makes sense to hide from the police department in plain sight. Like, you know, it's kind of like a pretty good power play to, like, hide from the police department in the house of the head of the police department.
Sorry, you put that idea in my head now.
Yeah, now I've, like, now I've planted the seed.
Styles. Derek is in Styles' bedroom.
He is. He's hiding out.
Maybe he wants to be in that bedroom for something
maybe
else.
Maybe he does.
It's, I did have sane thoughts, but they've now gone.
They've gone. My only note is that, like, it definitely implies that they're working on it together, and and Styles is doing the smart stuff because he's the smart guy.
Yeah.
Which Derek has finally seemed to realize.
You know, as I said in that Camaro, it sort of very much felt like Derek was trying to ignore Styles in the Camaro and just be like, why are you even here?
Yeah, which really didn't make any sense because it's like, one, Scott has a one-track mind, and his one-track mind is all occupied by Allison.
There's only one thought ever in Scott's mind is just a picture of Allison.
Yeah, Styles is at least like, I mean, Styles is like kind of the same because he's, you know, he's helping Scott get the necklace, but like he's at least operating from like an investigative point of view. Mm-hmm. I think, like, you know, he's trying to solve the mystery.
How do we solve this? Yeah.
Yeah. Which serves Derek way more than Scott being like blindly obsessed with his girlfriend or his ex-girlfriend.
Allison.
Yeah. Scott's like the Allison zombie. I should make a meme of that.
just take a screenshot of me, just Allison.
Yeah, I'll stick Scott's face on it. We then go to Scott breaking into Allison's house.
What is that, like the acupuncture hand thing?
I don't know. The shit people then put in the background of shots is sometimes truly random.
And then also, how many lamps do we have?
How many lamps does Styles have? Styles has 1, 2, 3 lamps plus an overhead light and a random surfboard.
But that overhead light doesn't make much sense because it's just in the corner of the room.
Oh, Styles' room layout makes no sense to me. Why is his bed on an angle like that?
Yeah, I suppose the overhead light is above his bed, but even so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Styles' room is like, it's like they ran out of money for bedroom decorating.
Yeah.
And they were like, we have this anime kind of decal. We have a surfboard for some reason. Even though we've seen it snowing, you can only really presume that they live in Northern California, not Southern California.
I was about to say, they're not anywhere near a beach, right?
No, so a snowboard, would make more sense than a surfboard.
It would.
And then he has some posters and
a skull.
And a skull, of course. Yeah, and some very big windows with a very big light blasting through the background, which is my pet peeve.
Yep. But anyway,
we won't talk about those because I can go on for ages about my pet peeves about lamps. And or at least none of the lamps in Styles' room are turned on at this point.
This is true. But so we get Danny has come over.
Yeah. Yeah, Styles has brought Danny to his house under false pretenses. As a study partner, a lab partner. And instead wants Danny to, I guess, hack into something.
Yeah, into the cell phone networks to find out who sent the text message to Allison that she should come to the school.
Which, is that even possible?
Not that I know of, but I probably also haven't spent enough time trying to do that sort of stuff. But
I mean, anything is possible.
Yeah. And
I feel like this was the period of time as well where, like, if they wanted to have a smart IT character, they were just like, he's a hacker.
which Styles they can do goes anything. Which Styles just goes by, like, I've seen your arrest record. You could do this. It'll be fine. And then, yeah, I think Danny's realistic response should be like, what you're asking me to do is extremely complicated, and I have no idea what the hell or how the hell to do that. But, yeah. But no, apparently Danny does know how to do that. But is just really not interested in doing it.
Yeah, even though Danny's pretty, like, insistent that they're going to do lab work. Danny is also very confused as to why there is a strange man sitting in the back of the shot. Like, also, what is Derek reading? Like a fucking encyclopedia?
Yeah, I was thinking that too, eh? Like, is it the dictionary or
yeah.
He's just like, right, I'm bored. I will what's the biggest book you have in this room styles?
It basically
looks like
a giant dictionary or an encyclopedia.
Yeah.
And for some reason Styles is also terrible at lying because he's just like, it's my cousin, Miguel.
And then Danny sees the blood on Derek's shirt and comes up with a brilliant idea.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, just more reasons to take his clothes off. I feel like this is the episode that got Derek compared to Grumpy Cat.
Yeah. It just tells Derek that he should change his shirt.
Yeah, I wish Danny is like every audience member ever, like secretly perving out the corner of his eye. Which, you know what? It's the same. You know, I've always kind of thought like fake tattoo, like TV tattoos are terrible generally. But weirdly, like the one on his back, like Derek's back, is pretty good. Maybe it's just because we never see it close up.
If you're looking at Derek's back, then I think you're looking at a different shot than me at the moment, because I'm looking at Styles and Danny.
No, I am. I just saw it and I was thinking about it.
Yeah. Danny is just completely...
Yeah, Danny's been busted checking Derek out. And Styles is an opportunist and is like, oh, I can seize the moment here.
What's the Latin for seize the moment or seize the day or something like that?
Yeah, he's carpe diem. Yes, carpe diem all the way. Yeah.
That's very much what's happening here.
Not that I understood what the blackmail was, because Danny is openly gay.
I think Styles is just using that to his advantage to get Danny to do what he wants.
Yeah, but I'm like, how? Because what is he blackmailing Danny with? The fact that Danny is interested in Derek? We already know that werewolves can smell it. So Derek already knows.
I don't know if this is blackmail as such. I think this is just more Styles is giving Danny a show.
He's paying him. He's like, look, I orchestrated this. Here's your payment. That's possibly even darker than blackmail.
It's just like, you know, I give you a show. You should now, because you're a good person, hack into this phone network for me and find out who sent this text message.
Yeah, I don't know if this like stands up under scrutiny, but it is funny.
It is.
That is definitely where the Grumpy Cat thing comes from.
Yeah. Derek is just so unhappy. Yeah. He's just like, I am being used and abused.
Yeah. He's like, I hate you right now. It's a lot darker if you do consider the context of Derek's history that we then learn in later episodes, possibly the next season. But it is funny at the time of, like, you know, Styles' line of, like, you swing for a different team, but you still play ball. It is funny.
Yeah.
But I still don't understand the, like, if it's implied blackmail, it falls up under scrutiny. If it's implied that Danny is paid in perving on Derek, which Styles orchestrates by getting him to take his shirt off twice, then that's kind of dark. In which case you fall into the category of, once again, Teen Wolf is possibly really ignorant about how like dark the subtext is. I don't know.
I suppose it's just one of those things where it's played for the laughs and you're not meant to overthink it.
Yeah. Yeah, which is seemingly always the way these shows go. until someone starts a podcast about it and then overthinks it.
I know. Who would do such a thing?
Who would do such a thing? But yeah, I mean, yeah, it is funny.
Yeah. It's very amusing.
I don't get why none of those shirts fit. Like, this isn't Hicklin at his biggest on the show. Like, he's not actually that much bigger than Dylan O'Brien.
I suppose he's still bigger than Dylan O'Brien, though.
Not
like,
really.
Dylan O'Brien's meant to be, what, a 16-year-old kid?
Yeah.
But not like, that he exactly looks like one, but...
I don't know. Dylan O'Brien's got pretty, like... He's got, like, a swimmer's build. Like, he's got pretty big shoulders. Mm. Yeah. He probably... those t-shirts would probably fit. But after that whole debacle, I do like the closing frame of of that scene where like Danny's like, you're a terrible person, and then Stiles is just like, yeah, keeps me awake at night. I thought that was very like the face. I mean, I hate when everyone just calls it the face acting, but yes, the face acting was great.
Yeah. He's just like, oh yes, absolutely. It keeps me awake at night every single night, and I don't care.
Yeah, Stiles is.
I get what I want.
Yeah, Stiles is very much like an opportunist. Like he's like, yeah, saw an opportunity, I took it. I'm not gonna feel guilty about it.
Yep,
it's gonna get me towards my broader pit, like towards the end game here.
Yep. I'll crack the case.
Yeah, we then go into like Scott back in, or Scott continuing his search of Allison's room.
I called this Scott creeping around Allison's room.
Scott is creeping around Allison's room, but he's kind of like moody and gloomy about it because he starts off by looking at Allison's mementos from their dates, and he at least has the decency to look kind of shitty about himself.
That's true.
And then he finds the locket, and it turns out Allison has been going on like a Bella Swan research montage of her own, just in the old-fashioned way.
Through a book instead of the internet.
And she's like, circled these words, which...
Scott translates on his BlackBerry. It's not even a Google search or anything like that. Well, I suppose... Yeah, remember when data was expensive and, like, maybe that's where I... Yeah, that's probably why Jackson asked to use Melissa's computer in the hospital as well. It's like, yeah, you remember when you actually had to go and find a computer whenever you want to access the internet?
Yeah, or like Wi-Fi at least.
Mm.
Yeah, when it was like $20 plus for 25 megabytes.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Anything.
That was insane. Dark days, yeah. You used to download your... Elmo ringtone or whatever.
What were those called? Because you could like.
Oh, stop this! Leave it alone. The other wank scene. Where's your toy? Where's your toy? Go find your toy.
Go again.
You're
saying what were those called?
What were those called? The ringtones you could get and whatnot.
I don't even remember, but I definitely had them.
Because there was the ones you could get via like the SIM card menu, and they were like provided by the cell phone provider. But then later on when you could actually connect to the internet with your phone, then you could probably get them from anywhere. But
yeah, I'm sure you used to be able to go to like Vodafone or something, and
there were like Wicked Greetings or something like that, eh?
Yeah, something like that. God, those were the dark days.
You could get them for like your voicemail and things like that, and yeah.
Yeah, those were the dark days.
Strange things.
What a thing to waste money on. although I do also remember when my phone just used to cost me like $20 a month.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, I know. And like, so the conclusion of the Derek Danny Stiles scene is that the text message was sent from an account name at Beacon Hills Hospital registered to Melissa McCall. Which everyone is rightly like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Melissa really does just do everything. She's the only one that works there. Yeah.
She's logged into every account.
She works at the long-term care facility as well, because that's where they go in and SEO next, doesn't it?
That is also a thing that doesn't really make sense to me, but we'll get there. Scott's finished his snooping. And my note for this is just, why does Scott break and enter through the front of someone's property?
And, not go out and through the back. Well, obviously, Allison's room is in front of the property, so...
I know, but he could just, like...
easier? I know.
Around just the roof.
Go through the hallway and go out a window out the back.
Yeah. I mean, so many of his problems would be solved if he just got a little more stealthy.
Yes.
He's really, really bad at breaking and entering. Because, Mr. Argent finds him and is like, come inside.
Chris is very good at this, eh? Just like, so I know how to make you uncomfortable. Come inside.
Yeah, Chris has to be working an angle in this scene because he like knows that Allison and Scott have broken up and is the one who doesn't want Allison to have anything to do with Scott anyway. Or like isn't happy about Scott anyway. Like we knew that from the parent teachers conference where Chris was like, you know, Scott's a bad influence. Or their relationship in total becomes a bad influence. But now he's like inviting him in and is like, Allison's going to be home soon. She goes for a run after school.
Beer.
Yeah, pops open a beer. I'm like, this guy's got to be making a power play to waste a beer. Like, he knows that Scott's not going to like drink it. So he's like wasting a perfectly good beer unless he plans on, I don't know, necking the second one. But
what is his angle then? If he has an angle, what is his angle? Like, the only angle that I can see is he actually genuinely trying to be a good person? But
I'll see the
that
only
also
angle,
doesn't really make sense.
Yeah, the only angle I could see is like he's trying to make Scott uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, that as well, which I think he easily succeeds at. But
a little fatherly revenge.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose his angle is actually also that he wants to know about
actually,
Derek.
Sorry. His angle is he wants to know about Derek Hale.
Yeah, we both completely forgot about Derek. Whoopsie. Yeah. Which is when we link back up with Allison and we join her on her run, which she is running out towards the wreckage of the Hale house.
The carcass of the Hale house.
Yeah. Which we can see from the like that reverse that the Hale house is apparently near the road.
Yeah, like that. I think that's the first time we actually see the house, the wide shot of the house in daylight. And I'm like, that is very clearly a carcass of a house. But anyway,
yeah,
we've been through this before.
Yeah. It's looking a little less damaged than when Scott and Derek last had a fight in it.
This is true. Did the staircase actually get damaged in their fight? Or
I can't remember.
Mustn't. Maybe it didn't.
Yeah, clearly no one has told Allison that she really shouldn't go snooping around unstable buildings.
Yeah.
She finds claw marks in the floor.
Which lines up with her research that she's just been doing on werewolves around town and things like that.
Yeah. And Kate sneaks...
My comment for this scene was when Kate... Yeah, when you said, Kate turns up. And she says, damn, you have some lungs on you when Allison screams. And I'm just like, that'll be the running, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kate's just like out and out stalking and taking her opportunities as well.
And Kate is just like, you don't need to be psychotic to be a killer. You just need a reason to kill someone. And I'm like...
I mean, Kate
okay.
in this...
Okay? Is that how she justifies it to herself?
Yeah, Kate in this scene is illustrating all the reasons why she is a psychopath. Her logic as to why she's not a psychopath is the reason that she's a psychopath.
Yeah. It's like the only reason you need to kill someone. The only.
She's basically like, you don't need a reason to be. You know, it's like you don't need to be psychotic to kill someone. You just need a reason.
Yeah.
And sometimes even then you might surprise yourself. And I'm like, that would be the definition of psychopathy. But okay.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Like, definitely. Yeah, okay. Yeah, Kate is a super dark villain. Like,
yeah. She's just always there to menace and just be like, yes.
Well, I think the reason like Kate is
I'm
also...
I'm going to kill them all.
Why? She's not even like that campy about it though, because I mean, there is like an element of campiness where she's like stroking this like charred wood, like wooden beam as she talks about like surprising herself and like, you know, into murdering a bunch of people. But like, I mean, because at this point, like, I mean, at this point, if you don't think that Kate set the Hale House on fire, then like, what show are you watching? but like, I don't think you need to like.
Oh, it literally gets illustrated to us in a minute too, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, like, Kate at this point, like, you are definitely meant to think Kate set the Hale House fire and, like, spoiler alert, Kate set the Hale House fire. Like, I don't...
She's sitting there stroking the charred piece of wood. She's like, yes, my pretty.
There's no subtext needed here. The subtext that the show avoids is like the rest of the backstory that I won't spoil just yet. But like, I think what makes her so dark is that like, she's a self-aware psychopath. Like, you know, she's saying to Allison, she's like, yeah, like imagine if this was your family. Like, imagine if this was your house that got burnt down. Wouldn't that drive you to do crazy things? And it's like, she is manipulating Allison with all the reasons as to why Derek is traumatized.
Yeah.
Like, that's so dark, man. It's so dark. And I don't know, like, and I think the thing that, like, trips me up sometimes is, like, that's so fucking dark and the show never acknowledges it. Like, the show is not that self-aware. Like, if this was maybe like a higher caliber show, then maybe sure, but like I never get the sense the show acknowledges the fact that like that Kate is like a horrific person.
Yeah. How long does it take for her to go away?
Forget.
Although I think it's next season, right? We get another adjutant relative, which in my mind is worse than Kate.
I mean, we're straying into some pretty heavy spoiler territory, so I'm not going to answer your question, even though I know the answer to it.
True.
But yeah, it's...
Yeah.
Kate is a dark, dark villain.
Yes.
With terrible motives and terrible logic.
And just a terrible person altogether.
Yeah, and her and the way that she's like manipulating Allison is insane. And super dark. And yeah. She's also like maybe a little bit of
the family business.
Yeah, come join my side of the family business.
Yeah.
I'm a psychopath with no empathy. And Allison is just like way too confused because she's just like, yeah, she's just not realizing this.
What I wrote here is Kate just goes, so you want power, do you? Come to the dark side and you shall get all the power you desire.
Kate is Senator Palpatine.
Yeah. Use that anger, Anakin.
Yeah.
And you can have lightning fingers.
Yeah, or to modernize the Star Wars reference. Who's the guy? Or to modernize the Star Wars reference. Kate is Snoke. Snoke to Kylo Ren. In the newer series. Oh my god! Yeah, I just I cannot with Kate. Kate is like my least favorite character, And I would almost appreciate like how much of a fucked up character, like how much of a fucked up villain she is, if the show was a little more self-aware about it. But because they're not, I'm just like, no, Kate's fucked up as fuck. Like, and why does no one realize this? Why does no one like realize the severity of how batshit this is?
If anyone should be going to the mental asylum,
it's Kate.
Yeah.
If anyone should be getting a lobotomy, it's Kate. She definitely deserves to be lobotomized.
Oh dear.
I do like that Allison's logic is very like, her MO is very communicated. I mean, she's literally saying it in the scene. She's literally
She's saying, I don't want to be afraid again.
Yeah.
Like, and I was afraid in the school and I don't want to be afraid again.
I like that it's like thought out and that you don't have to like try and fish around to like understand what she's doing.
Yeah.
Like sometimes it's nice when you have to like do the work yourself, but like I don't feel like this show is that kind of show, so it's nice that they do in this case.
Her character has constantly been someone who knows herself very well and knows her thoughts and feelings and knows how to express them and how to tell other people about them. She's a very good communicator.
She's also got like pretty good forward motion. She's got good forward momentum. Like she knows, like she could, like Allison's like a character in which you can hold both like conflicts with quite easy. Like you can see her conflict of she still has like romantic feelings for Scott and like still loves Scott or whatever.
Yeah.
But then she also has like this more demanding sort of set of feelings where she's like, he was straight up lying to me in that scene, in that episode. In that situation.
And I don't want to ever feel like that again.
Yeah, everyone is lying to me. And because of that, I don't want, like, I need to take back some control and be the one to, like, feel like I can protect myself. And unfortunately for her, she just has a psychopath thrown out.
Yes.
Although it is a little scary how she goes, I want to feel powerful. Maybe like a little bit of genetic psychopathy going on there.
Who knows?
Because Kate's like, I can have myself an accomplice. I can find my Anakin.
Yeah, the powerful line is where I got my Anakin idea. I was like, okay.
She's like, I can bring you over to the dark side.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it is kind of like a bit of a Star Wars trope because, I mean, that's what Anakin wanted. Exactly. Anakin was motivated by fear and the concept that being more powerful would assuage his fears.
Would solve his problems, yeah.
Oh, dear. That's a great metaphor. Allison is just Anakin.
Yeah. Does that mean Anakin didn't actually need power and all he needed was a therapist?
Yeah. Almost all the bad guys just need a therapist, apparently.
This is true.
Oh dear.
Oh no.
Do you think, I mean, we're now back with Chris and Scott. Chris is interrogating Scott. Do you think this is a house? Like an actual location?
It's really hard to tell, looking at the front of the house and whatnot, like it's a very big house, so it very easily could be a house. And if it is a house, I suppose it just makes it easier.
Yeah, like maybe it was a rental in the area and stuff, and they just like booked it out.
Yeah.
The only reason I say that is because like you can hear the echo in that scene. Like you can definitely hear an echo. Like Chris is kind of shouting, Scott's kind of shouting, like, and you can hear an echo, and it's just like, and it's huge. Like you have a height scale for it that is well beyond what like a normal set would be. I feel like anyway.
So you feel like it would be a location?
Yeah, I feel like it's a location.
That's fair. Yeah, I could agree with you.
It's also just like a very elaborate. It's like a very elaborate build in terms of like
set. There's a lot of beyond space and things like that you'd have to do because this is a very wide open room, right?
Yeah, it's a huge room, so it'd be like a huge amount of floor space to take up, and then it's got like a lot of like crown molding and just like like stuff that takes a lot of time,
a lot of work,
and a lot of work and a lot of money to buy,
and build.
And it's like for a set that we don't see that often, like across the season, we probably only see it like less than five times. Yeah, just kind of feels like maybe it's a house. I laughed when Chris sits like uncomfortably close to Scott.
This is where I kind of got the like Chris's kind of trying to just be a good guy and just protect his daughter. He's trying to investigate Derek at the same time. But my question I had here is I completely went to the side of like Chris, if he ever did suspect, this entire episode, so he doesn't seem to have any suspicion at all anymore that Scott might be a werewolf. Because in the next episode, they put their focus on someone else anyway. So, is it the next episode or this episode? It's the end of this episode. Yeah, they put their suspicion on someone else. So it's just like, obviously, Chris has never suspected Scott of being a werewolf, at least at this point, right?
Yeah, I'd say that's correct. But, like, I guess just because he doesn't suspect them for being a werewolf doesn't mean he doesn't suspect them for being, like, an accomplice of Derek's.
Yeah, or because not, they know of him.
Well, they know that, like, Derek's not the alpha, so they know that Derek can't turn people, so... Like, they don't really have a reason to believe that Derek, that any one of Derek's accomplices would be any more than his accomplice. Like, that they would, they know that, because they know that he can't turn people.
Chris is definitely still suspicious that, that Scott is, spending time with Derek. So it's like, why are you spending time with Derek?
Yeah.
Why do you know him? Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of took it as, like, he's just thinks that Scott might have information, and if he figures out like how they're connected and whatnot, that he might be able to put more pieces of the puzzle together. And like ultimately, I think it's like pretty clear that Chris operates from a very different like place than Kate. Like, even though you haven't heard much of the code, it's just knowing about it it's easy to imply that like Chris is operating from this sort of like. Manual, if you will.
Where do you think Chris operates from first? Protecting his family or the code? Or I suppose both, maybe.
I feel like both, like in the start, it's like very much both, or that those two things are in contention with each other, because that's kind of Chris's journey across the story. Like across the show. So it's like at the start point, he's wrestling with both, and this is the first time, presumably the first time that those two things have come into conflict with each other beyond like keeping it a secret from Allison.
That's the thing, right? So Chris has known, at least since I've been in this town, that Derek is the local beta werewolf. Suppose he's kind of trying to go after him now? Or at least they were in the start of this episode, but also for the most part, he's kind of left Derek alone, hasn't he?
Yeah, like he pursues Derek in terms of like getting Derek to lead them to the alpha.
Yeah.
Because they're still operating like with like only half the information. Like they don't know or have proof whether Derek is or isn't in relation to the alpha, because Chris doesn't know any of this stuff to do with like. What Derek's sister was investigating that like drew them back to this, drew Derek and his sister back to this town and like set the story off. Like, so Chris is operating without that half of the information. So he's like kind of, I guess, just working with what he's got and trying to, pursue Derek because he, I guess, doesn't know that he's like, because he doesn't know that Derek is pursuing the Alpha for different reasons.
Mm.
It's all kind of like tenuous and confusing. You have to do like kind of a fair amount of mental gymnastics to get there.
Very much so. It's yeah. Very fascinating though. Maybe that just leads to like the feeling of like inconsistent like C in the like story arc and things like that as well.
I definitely feel like a lot of the show could be way tighter.
Yeah.
But
in that first episode that Scott came over to the Argent's house, it very much felt like Chris was suspicious of Scott being a werewolf, right?
Yeah, I don't know if I think that Chris was suspicious of Scott being a werewolf or if he was just being like suspicious dad.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I suppose, see, with this scene, I've gone back to he was being a suspicious dad. But when I originally watched that episode, I was like, he's suspicious of Scott being a werewolf.
Yeah.
Maybe
that just felt implied because of the state, like the stakes were Scott being found out.
Yeah.
And like Allison comes in on the tail end of this episode and overhears Scott, you know, sort of trying to be like, would you
protect her? Yeah.
Well, would you believe that, like, you know, like, if I said that everything I did was to protect Allison?
Yeah.
Which
she just goes, to almost.
Well, I feel like that just highlights Allison's contention because on the one hand, it's like, yeah, oh, like, you know, he loves me. But then Scott's having this conversation with her dad. So clearly her dad knows way more than he's letting on. If Scott can have, like, if he knows that, like, if he knows about, like, why, like, Scott was doing the things he was doing.
Yeah.
Which, how Scott doesn't know that Allison's behind him, like, when he can, like, literally pick her heartbeat out of a freaking crowded high school is ridiculous.
When he is the superpowered man, yeah.
Yeah. The pick and choose is annoying.
He's very good at blocking out his senses now.
Mm. And we cut into, we go from that scene to a scene where Scott's talking on the phone to Stiles and Derek about what he found on the necklace, which is basically nothing.
Yeah.
So that's like kind of like a frustrating dead end. And I guess like another point of Stiles' character that you get is that like, it's like he really has no reason to like Derek at this point. But he's still willingly throwing away his something that's important to him to continue on helping him.
The investigation. Although, what's more important to Stiles, like lacrosse or the problem, the investigation, that is his character's main driving force, isn't it? Always and forever, too. Like I don't know, how important is lacrosse and his lacrosse game versus the problem, the investigation,
I think with the context of knowing the whole show, like, sure, you can look back at it with that gaze, but like, we know very little. Like, we've basically had like a grand total of like three scenes that say Stiles's role is like the investigative sidekick, and that's where that's where he's like kind of shines.
Is it shines and happiest as well?
Well, yeah, but he was like elated to make first line in the last episode.
True.
Episode before that, like, he was squealing. And he already knows that like this is kind of an important thing because his dad's taking
His dad's proud of him, and his dad, yeah, wants to come and wants to watch him.
Yeah. And he also knows it's going to cause trouble for himself because his dad is going to like obviously be like, where were you? And like, why were you not there? But instead, he just like is like pretty much immediately resigned to, like, he doesn't even really like think that much about it. Like, yes, he thinks about his dad and like what his dad's gonna say. But like, you know, Derek's like is like, you know, you're not gonna make it, and he's pretty much just like, yeah, I know.
So then we get Beacon Hills Hospital,
Beacon Hills Care Home.
Yeah, well, long-term care, but it's apparently also part of the hospital.
Yeah.
Did they get a new sign? Even the long-term care sign looks different, right?
Maybe.
And then also, what I just noticed is that sign under the logo says BHMH. What is the M for?
I think it's probably Beacon Hills Memorial Hospital. Please don't ask me how I know that.
Part not on the sign.
Please don't ask me how I know that.
Yeah.
I feel like that is one of the.
I think that is correct, but also, why is the word memorial not on the sign?
No, well, I guess they ran out of space.
Obviously. They were just like, it will be in an insert. It will be fine. No one will notice it. Oh, dear.
I love that, like, yeah, that's an insert shot, and that sign probably costs, like, minimum $400.
This is a better sign than what we were having. We were just having, like, printed signs on...
That's true.
On, what would you call it? Like,
some planks?
some wood or something like that. This is, like, a full, like, 3D printed... A 3D block letter sign. Like, this is a nice sign. They've upgraded their signs.
This is probably the actual location sign, and they've just gone and put like a bit of ply over it with some like stick-on letters.
Possibly. Maybe that's why it's BHMH.
It's definitely still probably like a couple $100 just for this quick insert.
Yes, very much so. And then we get Derek slamming Styles' head into the wheel of his Jeep.
Yeah, that seems funny.
And Derek just going, you know what that was for.
Although, if you did that with, like, genuine force, that would, like, probably break someone's nose.
I hope that's, like, a rubber steering wheel or something like that. That probably had to be, you just don't do it with a lot of force.
Oh, well, he didn't, like, when you watch that back a few times, you can see that it's, like, very, he's just guiding his head down, like.
they added the Foley in later.
Yeah, the dunk comes in later. Yeah, this scene is, like, I don't know, Derek in the scene feels very reminiscent of, like, the Derek that will come, you know,
do what you're told.
No, just, I don't know, just, like, the delivery and stuff, it seemed more akin to, like, later seasons Derek. I don't know why I felt like that, but it just sort of stuck out to me. It is kind of funny, like, having Derek acknowledge that Styles was using his body to...
Very much so. He gets his recumbents.
Yeah. I don't know.
He gets back at him.
He gets his comeuppance. Yeah.
Yes. But also, like, they wouldn't be here without
Danny.
Without Styles showing Derek off. So I'm like,
yeah.
Can you argue with the results?
Yeah. it's pretty hard to argue with the results. I don't know. I like the scene between them, even though it's like kind of a bit fucked up. It's definitely like it kind of feels like a clear the air kind of scene.
Yeah. We're back to square one now. We're even.
We're back to square one. We get Scott and Jackson at the start of this lacrosse game. And I won't lie, I'm kind of over Jackson, so I had pretty minimal notes on this.
I didn't have much about this lacrosse scene. I'm just like, yeah. Whatever. Let's get back to Styles and Derek.
Yeah, pretty much. Jackson's basically just poking the bear, right? Like, he's like, it's the bite that does it. And Scott's just, I guess, given into the fact that Jackson knows. So Scott's really, like, again, really bad at playing poker. Because he could have just gone with the deny, 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 deny. But he didn't. So Scott tells him that, like, you know, that he can't do it, that Derek can't do it, that there's, like, you know, he's outlaying all these things, and Jackson's just being obtuse and, like, to the whole situation.
And Jackson's just like, make it happen.
Yeah.
Scott starts telling him about the hunters. I mean, which Scott... Jackson goes, oh, wait, there's only one family in town who has assault rifles.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is some bullshit logic. This is some bullshit Jeff Davis logic. With the argent meaning silver in French thing.
I mean... Yeah. I suppose it actually does mean that in French, does it?
I think there's some tenuous link, but basically it's like highly tenuous and not as clear cut as Jackson is making it seem.
Jackson just happens to know this this obscure part of the French language.
Yeah. Yeah, why? I guess Jackson's really good at his French colors. He's playing that version of Duolingo that doesn't exist yet. Yeah, sorry, Jackson. I don't want to talk about you right now. It's late at night.
It's late at night, and Styles and Derek are out on the town.
Yeah, it's late at night, and we're cutting back in on Styles.
Checking out the long-term care hospital.
Yeah, I mean, now we know, like, Derek and Styles are on the phone. Like, Styles has gone in, obviously, because I guess Derek is still a fugitive. So they're on the phone. So now we know that, one, Derek has a phone.
yeah, which was very tentative in the previous episodes. We didn't know that Derek had a phone, and this is the first we see of Derek's phone.
And now we know he has Styles' phone number.
Was Styles the first person Derek gave his phone number to?
Maybe they have some late night texting. But unfortunately, it's like,
what are you up to, Sour Wolf?
Yeah, what are you doing? What was the text? What was the text thing for what you doing? WUD.
My mother is better at text language than me.
Yeah, I don't remember it, even though I definitely used it for a long...
Yeah.
Well, and by long, I mean, like, maybe 3 years, but, like...
Whenever I see a lot of it, I have to Google it and try and work out what it is. What it actually means.
Oh, there's so much, like, short abbreviations that I have to Google. The one that I always forget is, like, SML. I can't remember what that means, or SMH, whatever the fuck it is. Can't remember. I still don't know. Yeah, Derek is like, go look for my uncle, and Sal's like, is like, well, your uncle's not here, and neither is the nurse.
Yeah.
And Derek looks rightfully confused until he does some like, very what? Quick That's mental impossible. Math. I like that at least, like, for as much as like Derek is just abused,
He's very quickly able to work out what's happening.
Well, yeah, he's very quickly able to work out happening. He's done some very quick mental math. Which I suppose his uncle disappearing would be quite an anomaly. And given that he is the only other werewolf that Derek knows of, then maybe it's not that quick mental math. But I was more thinking that, like, he's very quick to be like, you know, to tell Styles to get out. Like, he's not just like, well, sorry, bud, you're fucked.
He cares about him. The relationship has blossomed over this episode, and he cares about him. Like I said, back in the Jeep, they got back to square one. They're even. So now he can care about him. And I suppose with any luck, Peter could be out and, you know, doing alpha things. But we quickly find out that he's not.
Yeah, I mean, I was just going to say that, like, I think it proves that Derek's not a bad guy. Like, he's like, not going out of his way to, like, get anyone hurt. He's like, he, like, realizes what's going on and is like, oh, no, there is a potential chance for a very innocent victim here. Get out.
Yeah.
But I love how Styles is just like, oh, fuck, basically. And Uncle Peter is super creepy. Yeah, Styles is literally just like slow walk away. And then he's like, you and you. Oh. He's like, oh my God, I'm going to die. Oh, dear.
And Derek just comes in and just, what would you even call that bloody,
he, like, elbows
the nurse? Yeah, knocks her to the ground.
I think the elbow to the face was a little bit much. Like, he possibly should have just shoved her out of the frame.
I mean, I suppose the elbow to the face is more effective than she's not just going to sit on the ground, although I think she does recover pretty quickly, right?
But she does. And I guess, like, they've got heightened strength, so, like, an elbow to the face might knock someone clean on their ass, but, like, from a human, an elbow to the face is just going to break someone's nose and probably double them up. Not necessarily, like, send them, like, woo, flying backwards.
This comes in here, like, I'm here. Rude.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this scene is, like, kind of comedic. Because Derek's got a quippy line, Peter's got a quippy line, and Styles literally just drops out of the frame.
Yeah, Derek goes, get out of the way. So Styles' solution to that was, whoop, down he goes.
Yeah, which is funny, because Derek's about to get his ass handed to him. And really, Derek should learn to stop using parkour as a fight tactic, because it's a bad one, but this definitely goes away as well with the later seasons, but I also like the first season has like elements of like genuine creepiness, like with Jackson having that wolfsbane rope pulled out of his neck and stuff, yeah. Like genuine gross creepiness. But for the most part, their quote unquote scary stuff or like their action sequences are kind of campy. Like Styles flailing on the floor is like kind of campy. The dialogue is kind of campy. Not that I don't think it works. Like, I enjoy it, but...
I very much enjoy that, especially compared to some of the really horrible, creepy stuff they do in the later seasons. I don't like that.
Yeah, some of the later stuff just, like, genuinely gets scary.
Yeah.
And Derek's just getting his ass absolutely handed to him in the scene.
Oh, sorry, I was mistaken. The nurse doesn't recover?
Maybe not.
The Styles has come back. And then decided he should leave again.
I'm gonna leave. They definitely also improve at the fight stuff.
That's true.
The scene is like wildly choreographed.
Is that then they got a better stunt coordinator who was less keen on parkour?
Maybe, I don't know. Even just the punches that like are being thrown are just like super staged. More so than like usual.
Do we lose the parkour in the later seasons?
I think so. I can't, but I also can't quite remember. Yeah, I was thinking with like Peter's dialogue, he's like doing his whole like, do you know how agonizing it is to like heal cell by cell? And I was like, does that mean that Derek's arm would have grown back if it had been chopped off? Because Peter was just an average werewolf at the time.
Yeah. Well, what? Peter says that he came back with like no personality or something like that, or like his personality was burnt out of him. So I'm like, has his brain regrown?
Yeah, maybe. Unless he means that like he was so like traumatized by being burnt alive that like you know, he had to like deal with some intense PTSD while in a coma. I don't know.
Maybe.
Does he also he also gives a timeline, doesn't he?
Well, was he in a coma or was he like...
Oh, I thought they had a timeline in there. I thought he said 6 years. Because that would have given an age for Derek. But
think it is claimed at one point how long ago the house burnt down, right? In one of the later episodes, in one of the earlier episodes, sorry.
I'll read the wiki and it will tell me.
I can't remember, yeah.
You know, for not that much damage, Derek seems pretty fucked up. Like, he's only been, like, kind of tossed around like a rag doll, but he's already, like, army crawling away.
Is that idea meant to be that he's just been beaten up by an alpha or something like that?
Yeah, I guess so.
There you go.
Yeah, so a scene between Harris and Sheriff Selinsky gets cut in to Peter kicking the shit out of Derek, where Harris starts explaining the backstory that presumably was what Derek was investigating at the start of the episode, where he's like, where it was like, it was 6 years ago, so my memory's bad, but like, I met this chick at a bar and she got this information out of me. And he weaves in a good amount of self-pity into that.
Why is Sheriff Stilinski talking to Mr. Harris in a classroom with no lights on?
Well, because it's ominous.
What is wrong with the lights in this school?
Yeah.
Like,
there's just one lamp, and then there's clearly some sort of background light.
And why can't they, like, be looking at each other when they're having this conversation?
Well, I think they can't be looking at each other because Harris is ashamed.
Yeah, that's fair.
But we basically learned that, like, whoever this mystery woman that was chatting up Harris, the information she got out of him was how to start a fire without being caught, without leaving a trace.
Yeah.
How to get away with arson.
And the only thing that he can remember about this woman is that she was wearing a necklace with a wolf on it.
Which is Allison's necklace.
Mm-hmm.
Which we don't really get told why. We don't really get told why Sheriff Selinsky is reinvestigating the Hale House fire.
Or what has led him
to do so.
To talk to Mr. Harris.
Yeah. Unless, like we're meant to believe that, like, Sheriff Selinsky is following the same clues that Derek is following, that his sister followed, like, unless we're meant to, like, believe that he's stumbled across this, but that's kind of, like, far-fetched, because what would be his motivation? Like, Derek and his sister's motivation for stumbling, like, well, for actively seeking out that information is that their family was murdered, but, like, what's the sheriff's reason to believe that, like, that would be the link? Kind of tenuous.
The only way I can think of this happening is the other way around, is that Mr. Harris has come to the sheriff and said, I need to tell you something.
Yeah, maybe.
But also the Mr. Harris does start the conversation, so I suppose that makes sense, but yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to tell which way we're meant to take that. I guess we might find out later on. Then we cut back to Derek just army crawling so pitifully slowly away from Peter. And we get, like, the healing, like, the Peter heals the burns, the remaining burns on his face. In the mirror or whatever. Which is basically like him just being like, he's not going to hide anymore, I guess.
Yeah. And then if he spins a mirror, they don't have to do the CGI of his face healing.
Yeah. And we cut back to Jackson and Scott at the lacrosse field, where Jackson gives Scott an ultimatum of, like, he has 3 days to figure out how to get Jackson the bite. Lest Jackson tell the Argents or Allison about Scott
and Sheriff's his claws.
Yeah, and then Sheriff Selinsky shows up and is like, "Where's my son?" Mm. And we go to Kate and Allison, and Kate is once again perving on teenagers. That's not good, Kate. Don't be a sicko.
Yeah, doesn't look good on you, Kate.
I mean, it's so bad. Kate is like, you know, maybe if I was in high school again, and then she like goes to like, maybe if I was even just a substitute teacher, and it's like, that is so wrong.
No, Kate.
Kate's like 30. Yeah. Like she's like 28, 30. And Jackson is meant to be 16. Very bad. Or at least Allison says it.
Allison, again, is a great communicator, just being like, you are sick.
If only she realized that Kate is actually sick.
Yep.
But Kate spots the scratch marks on the back of Jackson's neck and is like, has an aha moment. Which we learn that if the claws go deep enough, then that can turn someone. Not that that makes sense because Derek's not an alpha. But anyway.
Well, maybe they're just assuming that the scratch could have happened from the alpha. But it's true. Also like, if he had got turned, and they've already seen in the first episode, however long ago that was, the second smaller werewolf.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they would know about werewolves is their healing powers and their healing ability.
That's true.
So why would Jackson still have a scratch on the back of his neck?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very true. they kind of have a pretty fat plot hole there.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
I didn't think about that plot hole, but you're very right. That's
I only just came up with it now.
Oh dear. Plot holes on the fly. Yeah. Well, that's the episode.
Yes.
I feel like it was a pretty big episode.
Yeah. Alpha has been revealed. The Hale House being burnt down has been revealed. The death of Lara Hale has been revealed. Why it happened and things like that. We didn't get to talk about that much, but what was it? It was
Peter killed her for her alpha status.
Was she an alpha, or was killing her what gave him his alpha status? I forget how alphas work.
Well, I think Peter says that he had to kill her to become the alpha.
Which, to me, that could be either way, right?
And, okay, I guess I am spoiling. We don't know yet that the way you transfer alpha powers is by killing an alpha.
Does it have to be an alpha, or can it be a beta?
A beta has to kill an alpha to assume alpha powers.
Okay.
Like, well, that is the logic that we're given later in the show. I'm spoiling that a bit there. That's one of the other possible many plot holes in Teen Wolf. But Peter just says that he had to kill Laura to become the alpha. But, like, presumably that's why. Presumably Laura was the alpha and I don't know, who knows, you know, her and Derek are born werewolves. Maybe she inherited it when when the alpha of her family died, or something like that. Like, yeah, lots to like.
That's how alpha lore works.
Yeah, that's the episode. Lots going on in this one. I feel like we're definitely entering the end game, like the season end game.
Yeah, absolutely. You can feel it coming.
Yeah, you can feel it coming. We've got 3 episodes left of the season. So it's boogieing on. But yeah, that's a wrap on this week's episode of the Teen Wolf Unpacked podcast. And yeah, we hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed talking about werewolves for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
If you would like to write in or follow us on social media, you can find us at TW Unpacked Pod on Twitter, or at TWUnpacked_pod on Instagram, or you can email us at teamwolfunpackedpod@gmail.com. Until next time, folks, stay howling. I got to get rid of that ChatGPT line. Fucking hell.
Bye.
Bye.